atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Tonight, the cashless revolution hit a speed bump. New York City becomes the latest to ban retail that does not accept cash. Will Chicago be next? Highland Park is the next town looking to ban Airbnbs after a string of high-profile house parties gone wild. But homeowners can make a lot of money renting out their homes. Should the government take that away? And can Chicago be a great music town if no one else is around to write about it? Earlier this week, the city announced that 2020 is the year of Chicago music. And then 2 days later, the chief music critic from the Chicago Tribune left the paper. Do arts and culture need critics anymore? And HBO Max is about to reunite Friends. The super sitcom will return if everybody from the famous cast agrees. But why stop there? Which sitcom would you like to see reunited on primetime? Good evening and welcome. I'm Justin Kaufman. All those topics coming up tonight here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'd love to hear from you tonight. But first, we start with our big story. It was just a week ago that the scandal at Lincoln Park High School broke. The basketball team suspended, coaches reassigned, and top administrators fired. But why? Chicago Public Schools has been purposely vague about the misconduct and the fireable offenses. There's still confusion among parents, even after meetings earlier in the week. What's at the heart of this story is a community that feels that they've been left out of the decision-making. The principals who were fired were beloved for turning around the culture at the school. Today, LSC members and parents demanded a meeting with Mayor Lori Lightfoot and the top officials at CPS, and the mayor herself said she thought CPS was doing a good job. In the meantime, tensions are riding high and emotions are flaring at the Northside High School. Cassie Walker-Burke is the editor at Chalk Beach Chicago, who covers education in the region. Cassie, the mayor called the Lincoln Park High School case, quote, horrifying, but parents and community members still in the dark?
Well, I think this is a really interesting case because the district had a meeting with parents and students Monday night, and the district laid out a very clear list of charges that they are investigating at the school. And the list is really a dozen charges, everything from sexual misconduct and failure to follow the mandatory procedures to withholding evidence, dishonesty to families. I think the issue here that parents are really seizing on, some parents are seizing on, is that it's not clear who exactly did what.
Right.
And since the administrators were the ones ultimately removed, so you had coaches removed kind of initially in the beginning of January, and now you have administrators removed, what behavior did the administrators in particular conduct that led to this reaction?
You know, for LSC members and parents today, as they had a press conference to talk about this, they feel they use words like blindsided or left out in the dark, that they weren't part of the decision making. Do they need to be? Does the LSC deserve to be in the loop when it comes to these kind of charges?
Really interesting question. I think we've had local school councils in Chicago. So these are governing bodies that serve at district-run schools. They're elected every 2 years. They're a mix of parents and community representatives and teachers, but their powers are pretty limited. So there's only some things that they can evaluate a principal. They kind of check the budgets, but when it comes to this level of charges, is the district obligated to keep LSCs in the loop? And it's actually really not clear. This LSC is saying that because the charges involve administrators, the district should have kept them more involved. The district is saying the nature of these charges involves teenage victims. There are serious privacy concerns. And so the district is being very careful about how it right. proceeds here.
Okay, so I think the question and what resonates with a lot of people might be listening here is just, at the end of the day, by throwing out vague or listing a list of charges and then saying that these people have been removed, you raise the concern or at least the idea that we don't know what charge is attached to who. So is a sexual misconduct with the principal? Is the principal being fired for process? Is the coach being fired for process? Is it sexual misconduct? Today, the mayor went out of her way and gave some information that I didn't know about that involved student on student, involved adult on student. There's serious violations across the board, very serious issues. I mean, I think that's the issue for everybody who is a part of this community and people that are paying attention, that it seems like we could be a little bit more specific.
Well, I think that is what parents are asking for. But let's be clear that there are also parents of the victims, of the teenage victims, who don't want any more information shared. This is a school, we're talking about the basketball teams. That's a small, you know, at the end of the day, that's actually a small subset of students.
Right.
So identifying students, protecting them, protecting witnesses, I think that is all top of mind, at least for some district leaders, and that's why they're proceeding with such caution. So I think, you know, we have to be somewhat careful here, but that is indeed why parents are upset, if they feel like they're not clear why, in particular, their administration team was removed. And then let's not forget, in the middle of this week, a temporary administrator who was brought in to try to help stabilize the school on an interim basis was also removed after this video surfaced of what looked like her, you know, grabbing a student by the face.
Embarrassing video, yeah. 312-981-7200. Cassie Walker-Burke, editor at Chalk Beat Chicago, a great site that covers education issues here in the Chicagoland area, is on the line with me talking about the Lincoln Park High School scandal, which, like I said, just kind of broke last week this Friday. I remember being on the air last Friday when we were like, what is happening? It's been a week. One of the things that you've heard from parents, it was over the week and even into the even after the meeting they had on Monday, was the idea that, you know, a bigger picture, saying if there was a problem with a student and there was a problem with the basketball team, to put the school in upheaval and to take away some of the administration that they felt were changing the culture for non-basketball students, for other people who might be involved, that it's just too much, that there should be some thought that the student body is more important than the sum of one or two people.
Well, I think we have to remember the context in which all of this is unfolding. So 2 years ago, the Chicago Tribune ran this, you know, really massive investigation that documented back to 2000 the district's systemic failures to address sexual misconduct against students and largely at the hands of adults. And I think that in that investigation, it showed that there were often cases where there was knowledge at the school that something was happening and it didn't bubble up beyond the leadership. And so I think that in the past 19 months, we've seen the protocols from Chicago Public Schools change very dramatically, very swiftly. And, you know, people who, you know, victim advocates would say necessarily. And so now you have this case unfolding where you have student on student complaints, adult on student complaints, and the district is saying, like, we are not going to tolerate that, and we are going to act swiftly. And so has the pendulum swung too far in the other direction? I think that's what some parents, when we talk to them, are raising that issue. But here, when you're talking about student safety, you know, I think it gets to be hard to call it from the outside.
Right. And you know, obviously we're very respectful of the privacy and the concerns of the victims involved in any sort of wrongdoing, sexual misconduct or otherwise. So I don't think that the public are want names and to call it out and to tell us specifically every little detail that's happened. But I wonder if there's a happy medium. And the LSC and the parents have asked to meet with the mayor and CPS officials. Do you think they'll get any of that behind closed doors as the mayor and CPS officials are feeling a little heat?
Well, Chicago Public Schools said this afternoon that there's a meeting set for Tuesday. Apparently, there had also been an earlier meeting set in the week, but it had been scuttled because of some scheduling issues on behalf of the council. So I think that meeting is going to happen. It looks like it's going to happen on Tuesday. The LSC confirms it is happening. I do not know yet if the council is going to meet with Lori Lightfoot.
The mayor said today at a press conference she'd be glad to meet with anybody, but she's not going to give any more information than they already know. The last question I have for you is just looking at how this has played out over the week, to see some of the videos that have emerged from Lincoln Park High School in the hallways, some altercations between the kids. It just looks wild and chaotic. It looks like this experience or this whole story, this case that was looked to be a move to protect students has created a very unstable environment in that school. Is that the feeling here, as parents, that it went from that the pendulum swing has actually hurt the school more than it's helped?
Well, that's the concern. I think some parents have kept their kids home. But you also see, you know, the district is trying to step in and say they're sending over, you know, counselors and who are trained in social emotional techniques to, you know, they trained the staff this morning, I believe, on how to have talking circles with students. They have new administrators in charge over there who are retired administrators who have experience. And so the district is trying to address it. But I mean, ultimately, if you're a parent, you have to make the decision. Are you going to send your child to school that day? And some have not.
Yeah. Cassie Walker-Burke, editor over at Chalk Beach Chicago, covering education for the Chicagoland area. Cassie, thanks for joining me tonight. Appreciate it.
Take care.
312-981-7200. It has been a wild and chaotic week at Lincoln Park High School on Chicago's north side. And I asked a question of Cassie, and she made a great point about what is the pendulum swing. That's really what's at the heart of this. Do parents and community leaders at that school have a right to know why the administration has been removed? Or, if there are victims concerned and crimes propagated, misconduct, if you will, is there a right to protect the information and the privacy of those victims? 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Give us a ring. 217 says, if anyone has been charged with anything concerning Lincoln Park High School, be they adult or juvenile, it would constitute crimes, and that would mean CPD should be involved. But I don't think anyone's been crime. Although there has been reports in the papers in the last couple of days that CPD is looking into one of the allegations. So I don't think there's been any charges, but they are looking into it. Also, Mayor Lightfoot's a lawyer. She should know better than just say CPS is doing a good job. She's also a politician. She may have left her lawyer pants somewhere else, and now she put on her politician pants because she has to know that CPS, to everybody, CPS is her, and she's CPS. 312-981-7200. If I was a member of this community and these parents, and I had a student that was going there, and I believed in the principal and the culture that was changing at that school, and to have a district come in and make sweeping changes and not tell me why, I have to hear about it through the rumor mill, I think I'd be pretty angry. I also recognize that if the scenario is anything like the rumors, the alleged student-on-student and adult-on-student misconduct, and there are policies and there are rules in place, and if it goes up the chain to the principal and they find out about it and they sweep it under the rug or they don't follow the proper procedures, that's grounds for termination, right? I guess the question that's really at hand is how much does the community and the parents have a right to know the specifics? And Cassie's right. This comes straight out of the story that was, she said 2 years ago, I feel like it was a year ago, where the Tribune had that massive story on sexual misconduct claims at CPS and the ridiculously irresponsible clearance rate, or just rate, in which people were not punished, there were no consequences, reassigned and put back in place, and so many stories that were just heartbreaking to read. Justice was not served for a lot of our kids who were in Chicago public schools. And when the mayor read that at the time, Mayor Emanuel, he was livid. Remember that? He was crazy. That was one of his tears in the eyes moments. And he vowed to change everything. And he put a whole new sexual misconduct handbook in. Came on all the shows, talked about it. But you have to ask if the handbook is get rid of them, like Joseph Stalin style, get rid of them, put a thing over their head, get rid of them. Let's just wrap it up. Next. We're not going to tell anybody about what we're investigating. Next. I'm not sure that that's the right response. If the principal violated the core processes that were set up in CPS, that were set up because of the Tribune story, and they did exactly what the Tribune story was told us administrators have been doing for years, grounds for removal. But tell us. Say, we have proper processes set up. And they've done that. They just have been vague about explaining it, even to parents in that meeting. They came out and said, I don't even know what any of this means. It seems pretty simple to go, listen, we have a system. It's important to protect our kids. The principal decided that he's not going to follow the system because he cared more about the teachers or the coaches or the basketball team than he cared about the students. And we can't have that in CPS. You get more information about Superintendent Eddie Johnson or Ed Burke, Alderman Ed Burke, or other sensitive cases from politicians than you do on this case in Lincoln Park. 312-981-7200. 630 says, request a statement from those fired. The Tribune has tried. The assistant principal went on record. The principal has not been reached for comment. But the assistant principal went on record. And this also leads to the more, I think it's more to the case of the parents in the LSC. The assistant principal said, I never was told why I was terminated. I was shocked and surprised. I didn't even know there was an investigation. And now I'm on the do not hire list that CPS puts out. My career as an educator is over, and I don't know why. Maybe she's lying. Maybe she does know. Maybe she's just protecting herself or making herself look good in the paper. But it fits the narrative that it seems that CPS is tight-lipped and they're not telling even the people they're investigating what's going on. And I don't know if that's right. We can't be a society that lets people just get away and lets, you know, the power brokers at the top kind of make the decisions on what's good for them and in spite of the students that they're there to protect. But at the same time, we are a society of due process. And if you're going to fire somebody and remove them, especially someone who has such impact on the kids and the kids' lives at this high school, in some cases, the reason why the kids are at the school, you have to take that into account. It's an interesting story, and what a wild, chaotic week. To see the videos and to see how the school has really had a difficult time in the last 2 days, to have the ridiculous, asinine story of the temporary administrator grabbing a kid's face, which is just like, doop! Like, that's just egg on. That's tripping over your own story. Good job. I'm going to embarrass everybody. To inside social media sit-ins and altercations and violence in the hallways and fights, and it looks like I don't know, it looks like Lord of the Flies high school hallways. This cannot be what you thought the result was going to be by acting swiftly and removing these administrators. It's a story that hopefully will resolve itself in the next week when they do sit down together. Parents sit down with CPS officials and hopefully get a chance to sit down with the mayor, and they can close the door and they can all act like adults. They can say, this doesn't just for us in the room. This is what happened. Tell your community. Don't leak it to the press. And then everyone goes, all right, I feel like we got it. And we now realize why it was so sensitive. Thank you. Let's hope that happens. I'm not sure that I'm that confident that's how it's going to go. But we'll see you next week. 312-981-7200. Coming up here, got a great show lined up tonight. I'm excited to welcome Molly Melman to the program, the Let Us Entertain You sibling of Jared and RJ, Rich Melman's kids who run Let Us Entertain You. She is one of the go-getters who has opened and partnered with the Rancics for RPM Seafood. And she has built her own name and her own empire, restaurant empire, inside Let Us Entertain You. So Molly Melman be my guest a little bit later in the program. But coming up right after the break here, let's talk about NYC. Today, the big day, they banned cashless stores. They said it's out. No more cashless stores in New York City. What about Chicago? You know what I'm talking about, these newfangled stores that are like, we don't take cash, we just take cards. I mean, pretty much we're going to have a new world order with no cashiers at all. Talked about that last night. But should governments be doing that? Should they be getting into the world of banning what kind of currency or changing the way that stores operate inside their own walls? 312-981-7200. We'll take a break and talk about that next here in 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you. 720 WGN till 11 o'clock tonight. I mentioned earlier in the intro that the Friends cast is reuniting for an HBO Max reunion. HBO Max is going to be the new streaming service for HBO, which I thought that's what HBO was. Okay, so a premium service on top of a premium service. Yeah. But they seem to have everybody together, the whole cast. And it made me ask the question about whether or not you want to see other sitcoms reunite. We've seen some failures, I think, maybe not failures. That's a strong word. But the hype of putting Will and Grace back together, or maybe Gilmore Girls on Netflix, which I know was a big deal. That's not what they're talking about here. This is going to be some unscripted vehicle. But do you want to see your favorite sitcom? What's it going to be? I already got some great texts, and people seem to resonate quickly, saying, I'd love to see The League, the FX show The League. That was a big show. Had a lot of famous people on that show, including Nick Kroll. It'll be interesting to see that show get back together. Great ensemble show from the aughts. Another says, I'm sick of the remakes. I'm sick of the reunion shows. Give us new material, new content. That's true. HBO Max is going to launch with this Friends reunion. They're going to pay them so much money, and they're going to launch the whole thing. Kind of like what Disney Plus did with The Mandalorian. They're going to launch a Friends reunion. Some sort of unscripted vehicle, which I hope does not mean we're on stage with the cast and it's an interview. Yay! Ladies and gentlemen, to the stage, Matt LeBlanc. Yay! If they do that, like David Letterman's show on Netflix, if they do that, nobody wants to hear from Matthew Perry. That's not worth $4 million a cast member. That's what they're looking to get paid for this reunion. So 312-981-7200. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. So you may have seen a trend in the last couple of years, right? Stores popping up that don't accept cash. Retailers from Epic Burger to Sweetgreens, they're leading the charge, pushing credit cards, citing customer efficiency, safety of their employees, some of the reasons. We had the guy from Epic Burger on, remember? He's on a couple of years ago talking about how great this was for his business. This was going to revolutionize retail. But hold your horses. City governments are fighting back. The New York City Council just prohibited businesses from refusing cash payments from its customers. NYC joins a couple other cities, like Philadelphia, San Francisco. DC is hearing about it. I think they have a law that's on the books coming up next week. They're all pushing back. So how about Chicago? Well, it was a big pet project. Remember this of Alderman Ed Burke? Last year and the year before, he was really on his horse about this. But he's had his hands full with some other businesses. But it begs the question, why are governments getting in the business of what restaurants can accept as payments? I feel like I continue to come back to this. Maybe it's the libertarian in me. But I'm not sure that this is an area that needs to be regulated by local city governments. Sure, cash is currency. I get it. And sure, there are some in our world without credit cards or without debit cards. Some that might be too young. Think about all the teenagers who don't have one. Or maybe people who are older who don't bank in that way. I get that. But you know what? There'll be lost customers. We're not talking about this replacing cash. These are stores that choose this kind of payment. And so for you don't go there. And the teens don't go there. That's lost revenue for Sweetgreens, for Epic Burger. Just like the businesses who refuse debit or credit cards. You go to a bar and they're like, cash only. We're not looking to City Hall to be like, oh, wait, hear ye, hear ye. Everybody must accept credit cards. So why are municipalities getting involved in something that seems to be part of the free market, the marketplace, capitalism? And frankly, they take this on, but not hidden airline fees? Because it's always been the thing that they always throw back. Well, you know what? This capitalism. You don't have to fly. Oh, you don't have to get a fancy salad. 312-981-7200. The world is changing. I can press my phone against the cash register and pay for a latte. All I need is your phone number and I can send you money. Is cash a thing of the past? And do we need governments to protect it? 312-981-7200. That's what I want to talk about here. 773 says it's a scam. They just want to get the poor vote. The politicians, you mean? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I'm not sure. 773 says, printed on our money, it says good for all debt, public and private. I understand that. But there are many places and many marketplaces right now that don't accept cash. You go to Amazon on your computer. You can't put a 20 into the CD-ROM. Right? You can't put a bill in. So I understand the idea printed on our money, what it says. But there are already marketplaces that don't accept that type of money. So why? Because we've done it in the past, does it have to happen in the future? Now, I would be on everybody's side. I'd be on your side, 773. If this was a mandate from the government that said, it's only credit cards and no cash, then I'd be like, no, that's not what it says on the bill. But that's not what's happening. Businesses are choosing which kind of currency they want to accept. It's not widespread. Most businesses say, I'll take your 20. I'm not really in a position where I want to take customers out of my store. But these businesses, and when the Epic Burger CEO was in here, that was his point. He's saying that this is a way for me to counter costs. I don't have to have cash in the building, so I don't have to worry about my employees. I don't have to worry about security. At the same time, I can be more efficient. The customer wants this. They want to go fast. They don't want to be stuck behind someone who takes a jar and pours a bunch of quarters on the counter. 312-981-7200. 630 says, shout out to the Pink Squirrel Bar in Lyle, cash only. Yeah, there's a lot of cash only places. And you know what? Great for them. I have to make a decision at that point, right? I walk in there and I don't have cash, I gotta go find an ATM if I want to go to that bar. There's not a law. I don't go up there and go, you know what? This is against the law. You're going to accept my MasterCard. That's not how it works. 630 says maybe it's a tax thing. Maybe government and local municipalities aren't looking out for us. They just want to make sure they're collecting their fair share of taxes with cash. I'm guessing it's easier to hide much more than you're taking in. Well, that would be an argument for cashless. It's also an argument. I would think that they would have more record. There's nowhere to hide it if it's done by debit card, Venmo, your phone against it. There's records of that. There's no records when I get my $3.70 back off of 10 when I order a cappuccino. $6? I don't know. 773 says it's not, pushing back on the other, it's not a debt if you haven't made the purchase yet. Those cash-only bars always have an ATM. Let the businesses decide, says 773. It's on my side. Thank you, right? And I feel like I'm free market Justin is popping out of my shell. But far too often, we see these governments kind of overreach. Maybe there are some people who can't afford to have a credit card or bank in that way that are going to get themselves a debit card. I'm not sure if it's even at that point, they don't have bank accounts, which then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, maybe people are doing that. I don't know. But at the same time, I'm not sure that there needs to be laws in the book to so they can get a fancy salad or a Beyond Burger, whatever they sell at Epic Burger. 630 says, no cash. It helps curb employment theft. Yeah, that's what we were talking about. And it's all backed by the dollar anyway, as 262 says. It's just a different kind of check. Yeah, I'm surprised everybody's with me here. 312-981-7200. The anti-cashers are winning. that should be the name of the group, anti-cashers. Are anti-cashers ruining society? Again, There have been a couple of times where I had cash in my pocket. I walked in, and this just happened. I think it was, maybe it was a salad place where I had a 20. And I was like, ooh, this thing is burning a hole in my pocket. I walked up to the cash register. I'm like, I got a guacamole salad with Brussels sprouts and some radishes, some root vegetables. How much? 13? Wow. Here's a 20. And they're like, we don't take cash. And I'm like, well, then I'm out. I'm out. I'm not going to pay you. And I walk out the store. That's the deal. That salad company loses, right? They lose my business because I had only a 20 to use. I go next door to the burger place and say, the heck with the salads. I'm eating fries. My cash. 773 says, not an anti-casher, Just get government out of my business. All right. Costco only takes Visa, not MasterCard. That might be a different issue. That is another one. At one point, we're going to peel back on that, too. Because one of the issues that NYC was talking about in the story was that there seemed to be incentive for these businesses to do it because Visa, it might just be Visa, we're actually giving incentives back to those businesses because they know that they're getting a percent, there's whatever the interest is that they're charging businesses to use a credit card. They're trying to encourage businesses to go cashless. And the municipalities pointed in New York City, the council pointed to that being an unfair deal, which I'm not sure it's an unfair deal. Again, I'm like, well, they want you to use Visa because they know they're going to make money off of the interest. And I'm not sure. In that case, it might be that Visa is worked a relationship with Costco. The point said, we'll make give you a better deal on every the cost of every purchase if you only use us. Again, I don't know. There are many factors: bank rules, fees, perks, cash transportation fees, merchant services, labor to keep track of the cash, and in some cases, flat-out discrimination. This is for or against cash. Taxation is theft. Vote libertarian. Whoa, really? Yeah, I really entered a club, haven't I? I'll take that. Tom from Elgin, kind of like me, said he doesn't carry cash. Debit card only. So even if you're places that do accept cash, you're always using a debit card. And to be honest, Tom, and you know this, that's what banks prefer. There's hidden fees everywhere, and there's fees that are they can't put a fee on your cash. That's why they put $3 on an ATM trying to get it from you. So banks are really pushing our whole society towards it. 312-981-7200. 219 says, I'm very happy to pay with a debit card or cash or whatever, but it's a federal law that cash has to be accepted as legal tender since the U.S. started using paper currency. I understand that. But I think in this case, that's the same argument you make with I could pay with a stamp if I wanted to, right? I go to McDonald's and I can pay with a stamp because it's legal tender. Heard that argument all the time. I would push back because I'm not sure that I think businesses can make a decision on because they do it all the time. There are a lot of businesses that will accept check instead of cash or don't want to deal with cash in general because it's just not going to work for them. So I'm not sure that that's the case because I would make an argument. Then how do you explain Amazon? How do you explain the online market? You first of all, your brain is like, well, yeah, you can't take cash. It's online. But if we were following the logic that 219 just put out saying it's legal tender, you have to take it. I can go to Amazon and say, I'm not paying with my card. I'm going to pay cash. When your delivery guy shows up, I'll pay cash. They won't do that. So how are they skirting the law if that's the case? So that's what I'm saying. This may be antiquated, the myth that everybody has to take cash, just like everybody has to take stamps. 312-981-7200. Take a quick break here. Come back. Got some people on the line. Some more texts. Let's stay on this and see what we get. 312-981-7200. Should Chicago go anti-cash? It was the other way around. Or should it ban anti-cash? Either way, stay with us. 630's got a great point. Instead of saying you're cashless, the store says, you know, we don't accept cash. Why not put a huge surcharge on cash? Like, I don't know, like they do for all sorts of products that they don't want you to buy. You know, vice products like cigarettes or alcohol. Or marijuana, if you look at the tax on you want to go to a dispensary. They say, let them charge $5 surcharge for cash. So if you use cash, $5 extra. Wow. Like they do for credit card surcharges for gas stations. It's not a bad idea. I mean, maybe that's a better way than to get around it. If you're going to be Sweetgreens or you're going to be Epic Burger, and at one point or another, Ed Burke is going to get out of his legal trouble. He's going to go back to business. We got to ban these things. Why not say, okay, we'll accept, but we're just going to charge, if you pay credit card, it's $10. If you pay cash, it's $15. Would that be illegal? I think it would be, right? I feel like there's ways that they do that all over the place, and they kind of change the price depending on how you pay. They do it at the DMV. the DMV says your license plate renewal is $100. They say if you're paying with a Visa, it's $102 because they don't want to pay the charge, which is they're the only ones in the world that don't want to take on the Visa charge. Visa charges every store a finite amount of money, a percentage, $1 probably what it comes down to, for every purchase. That's why you see cafes and restaurants or whatever say under $10, can't use your credit card. Because they don't want, they're losing money in doing so. And every store says, well, for the efficiency to be able to use these credit cards and what our customers want, we'll absorb it. Maybe we'll jack up our price. Maybe we'll do whatever. But the idea being that we know they want to use the Visa, so let's make a deal with Visa. Except the state of Illinois. For whatever reason, probably the only state in the union that does it, but they're like, you know what? No. We're not taking on that charge. You take on that charge, taxpayer. We want all that cash. We want that $100. We need it. We got to fix the Kennedy. So you're paying that extra $2. 773 says, so if you give your son an allowance, you have to put it on a debit card? No, that's not what I'm saying. I still have the right to use cash wherever I want to use cash if the store accepts it. If they don't accept it, yes, I'll buy the argument that there is some discrimination. Someone wrote in saying it's discrimination against poor people who don't have bank accounts or the money or a credit card. So how are they going to eat if they can't go in there and use cash? And as I said earlier in the segment, I agree with that. If it were widespread, that if every restaurant, retail did this, or the municipality had a vote the other way saying it's all cashless, I would agree. But there are some stores that have the right to accept whatever they want to accept. And hopefully, if they're discriminating in any form, that they're punished for it, meaning that they don't get the people who don't go there. I'm not sure that I've heard a strong argument to say that cashless is the devil, as we're seeing with these municipalities that are going after it. Now, again, I have been in situations where I've had cash in my pocket, and I usually don't. I want to, just like Tom mentioned, he doesn't have cash anymore. I'm just like that. Maybe it's a generation. I'm 45 years old. Maybe that's a generation. Maybe it's a thing where now I realize it's a lot easier just to Venmo somebody or be able to use a swipe at the self-checkout, like Mary tells us every night. She's more into that. And we're having thoughtful, great conversations about retail in the future this week. But in this case, I just don't know if the government needs to get involved with outright banning cashless stores. Why? And I get it. I guess there's, you know, the concept that governments are there to protect the most vulnerable. And maybe that's enough to make a whole governmental body vote to ban it. But I also feel like we live in a system that doesn't necessarily care about the vulnerable. And so you're cherry picking. If it's really about protecting the vulnerable, then do that. A lot of situations, from excessive interest rates to predatory landlords to hidden airline fees. There are a lot of other things that they always go, well, you know what? That's the free market. So why can't this be the free market as well? 312-981-7200. We're coming up. As 8447 says, cash is established number one form of payment until they take away cash completely. Everybody should accept cash. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. You would think that the government would prefer cashless society, hard for criminals to use check cards. That's what 262 says. Yeah, you're right. Cab drivers want cash. They hate credit cards. Okay. Well, that's not my problem. I love cab drivers, but it's still money. Start paying with stamps. I can do that. Start paying with stamps. You want me to? And 815 says you could use a prepaid card that you buy with cash. Maybe that's the future. 312-981-7200. Okay. Coming up, let's continue this, but let's talk about Airbnb. Another evolution moment in American society where people have been able to subvert or evolve and find ways to provide short-term rentals where they can actually get paid to rent out their house. But we're seeing more and more municipalities ban it. Because of bad apples? Because of dumbass house parties? Highland Park is the latest that is thinking about banning Airbnbs and other short-term rentals. They follow suit with a bunch of their neighbors. Should they be in the business of taking away possible income from you? If you did everything, you went up and up, and you decided you wanted to be a short-term renter, you had the extra closet that's locked. If you go to an Airbnb, there's that one closet that's locked. You had that. You had everything set up. You did exactly what you're supposed to do. And then the town that you live in says, no, we don't like it because we don't know who's renting. So you can't do it. It's happening across the country right now. What do you think of that? Let's talk about that coming up after VIX News. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman here. 312-981-7200 at 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn, great newscast. Did you hear that story about the Jane Byrne construction project downtown being a year late? They had said that it was going to be 2018. And now it's looking like, what do you say, 2021, 2022? That's nuts. $250 million over? Is that what they said? This has been an amazing project. This was the project that, of course, is downtown, the interchange, where all the different expressways come together. They've been knocking down bridges, putting cones up for years now. And this is going to be a perpetual, this is going to be tour. There are going to be tours. You're getting the Jane Byrne interchange tour, and a bus will go by. It'll be like Patrick McDonald hosted it and be like, and there is the interchange. They've been working on it for 25 years. Take a look right there. That used to be the Adams Bridge, but then they tore it down. They put up another one, tore it down again, and there it is again. All right, let's go see where the Blues Brothers jumped. Come on. It's becoming a monument. Here you go. You got the Sears Tower. This is where the Board of Trade is at. And the Jane Byrne Interchange. The worst management infrastructure project in the history of Chicago. Moving on, they reversed the river. What is happening there? I love the response from state officials as well. You know, poor soil. Yeah, really? No, really? The second thing in VIX was city. They weren't aware of such tight city restrictions. You didn't do your due diligence. I mean, I can Google restrictions, city restrictions. All right, move on. That's a painful story. For anyone who lives in this area, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, let's talk about, as 847 points out, Mayor Byrne wasn't even the mayor for the length of time that it's taken to do this project. That's so good. That's so good, 847. That's good. Also, 847, a different 847 says, you know what's great? A Cheers reunion. That'd be wonderful. Yeah, that's a great idea. Those actors would be amazing to come together for a Cheers reunion. We're talking about Friends. Throughout the program, Friends is considering a reunion through HBO Max. All of the Ellis Ensemble players are going to get millions to come back for an unscripted project, whatever that means, quote unquote. I hope that doesn't mean an interview. I hope it's more like Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that. But Friends is reuniting. Which would you like to see? Cheers is a great idea. Oh my gosh, could you imagine? And you know what you do? I don't know if you could pull it off. You do it like they've been doing these live shows. You know, ABC has the Jeffersons or have different actors do All in the Family. What if you got the real actors from Cheers? Ted Danson, Kelsey Grammer, George Wendt, John Ratzenberger, right? Rhea Perlman, Kirstie Alley, Shelley Long. Make it a kind of when Shelley Long and Kirstie Alley right at that point when they came together. Who am I missing? I'm sure there's more. Edith, George Wendt. All of them together, right? I mean, amazing experience. That might be our gold. Put that on paper. We're going to make that formal. Send that to Hollywood. Dear Hollywood, the flyover states would like you to redo Cheers. How about that? All right, let's get to this Airbnb story. This is a story that came out this week. Highland Park considering whether they should ban short-term rentals. This because of gunfire. This is becoming an all-too-familiar story. I think it was a New Year's Eve house party in Highland Park that went awry. And the cops came and there was gunshots. And it turns out it was a 8,000-square-foot home that was being rented out for the weekend. Neighbors were interviewed for this piece that was in the Tribune, and they said the home is rented out almost every other weekend or every weekend for the last 6 months. Sounds like whoever owns that house is making their money. But it's obviously being rented out for parties. And in those parties, in this one that was on New Year's Eve, there was gunfire. The Highland Park City Council is considering banning outright short-term rentals. They tried this before, but they ended up regulating it in a different way. I think that they couldn't, I think they put restrictions on owners and how they could advertise on these sites like Airbnb or Vrbo or HomeAway, those kind of places. But now they're thinking about an outright ban. And again, I'm getting on my soapbox here. I get that. There are some bad apples, and there has to be a way to make sure that those bad apples are not coming into your community. But that's on them. To ban me as a homeowner from participating in a legal outfit to provide my house as short-term rental for the good of my neighbors, possibly not being exposed to a party, I don't like it. Again, this is how we set up our economy. This is how we have all decided to ebb and flow as Americans in a capitalistic society. Some things go awry and we try to outright, but I wonder if there's a way to put the onus on the renters. Because in this case, if Highland Park goes in and follows suit, and they're following suit, I mean, this is not a new story for this area of the world. Neighboring suburbs like Wilmette, Winnetka, Deerfield, Northbrook, they've all said no. You can't do Airbnb in our communities. 312-981-7200. If you live in these communities or in a community, or if you're a neighbor, let's start there. If you're a neighbor and you have a neighbor who does short-term rentals and you notice the part, it happens in my neighborhood. That happens right next door to me. Right around Lollapalooza time. I'd be like, who are all these? Why does the gate continue to swing? You keep hearing that clang. And I'm like, they never go out this much. You look out and it's three kids out there smoking cigarettes. Who are these guys? And you're like, oh, right. This is a, they got wristbands on. My neighbor rented it out. Okay. All right. It was okay. A couple of clanging gates. But what if it was bigger? What if it was trouble? If you are someone who's had an experience where short-term rentals have gone awry next door to you, make the case for it. 312-981-7200. Or if you're someone who rents out and doesn't want the government up in your business, you follow the rules. You regulate your home. You make sure that it's all on the up and up through Airbnb or the other sites that might be used. Why is the government saying you can't do it? 312-981-7200. 847 says neighbors need to start minding their own business and stop whining. Well, I agree with that. I'm all into that, except when there's criminal intent or criminal behavior. The cops were called to this residence on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve at 3 o'clock in the morning because of gunfire. And that would be the first thing, maybe when you're renting out a home. Are you going to shoot a gun? And that's not, I mean, this is all about Highland Park. The ones in Chicago, and there's a couple of Airbnb watchdogs that are pretty funded by hotels. Hotels hate Airbnbs. But they'll point out every single story. And this is a real problem in Chicago now where they're essentially just party houses and everybody knows it. So you can Airbnb a party house for the night and you have a huge, huge rager and you don't care about anything around you. The case that happened in Wicker Park, I think it was last week, there was an Airbnb where they were shooting a rap video. The cops came up because of noise violations and everybody ran. In the process, dumped their guns. A couple of them got arrested. They were on probation. All the kind of stuff that you read about in the newspaper. But that was an Airbnb. So I will swing like a pendulum on this one, too. That's what's going on there. Is the renter or is the rental at fault? 312-981-7200. Let's talk about it. I'm fascinated by this because I'm sure if the parties that were next door to me were out of control and I had to bring the police in, I would think much differently about this. But I also always, even though I don't do it, I also salivate at the idea that if I had to, I could rent out short term. I could. How many times have we? Remember how many people were like, I can't wait for the Olympics to come to Chicago in 2016. I'm going to rent my place out. That was even before Airbnb. But when Lollapalooza comes to town or the World Cup or any huge thing, you don't think that's the first thing most Chicagoans are thinking about. They're like, I'm putting this up on Airbnb. I'm going to make sure I have enough towels. And I'm going to go away for the weekend and I'm going to make a ton of money. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. What do you think? We'll take your calls and texts after the break. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN Radio talking about Airbnbs and whether or not municipalities should ban them outright. Craig, what do you think about this topic? Craig, you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, what do you think of this?
I'm fully against it, and I'll give you two numbers why.
Okay.
Property taxes 20 years ago, my property taxes were $1,800. Now, they exceed $9,000. The last thing I want... somebody not consider buying my house, it's out of the market, but the last thing I want is because of this. Right. I live in Buffalo Grove. About 3 years ago, they decided to require registration of rentals. Mm-hmm. We have about 200 houses in the area that are rentals. They knew that people that rent a house, even though they're there all the time, they don't have the same consideration for the house because they don't own it.
Yeah. Here's
my
issue, though.
This kind of thing is really bad.
Okay, I get it. But, Craig, there's in any situation, there's going to be the bad, like the pendulum. There's going to be the bad. But most Airbnbs, I mean, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who do it constantly. They're not throwing a party. They're going in and they're going to Lollapalooza or they're possibly going to enjoy downtown Chicago and they're going to set up shop. You don't even know they're there. Is that okay?
It's not okay, in my opinion. And I'll also tell you the condos in Chicago, mm-hmm. many of them don't allow this for the same reason. Because yeah. people are paying a lot of money for those, and they don't want to have somebody that's using their next door that doesn't own it, that right. doesn't have the same consideration. It's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea.
That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
I like it. Thanks, Craig. Thanks for calling in. 605 says, I live in Sturgis, South Dakota. Every year I rent my house out to a group of accountants for 2 weeks. They're a great group of guys. It pays off roughly a third of my mortgage every year. A third of the whole year. I don't know if I'd do it if I didn't know them, but it helps. 563 says, Justin, it's the renters that need to be blamed. Lies and false premises are on the perpetrators. Unless it happens more than once, then maybe it's on you. Airbnb needs to vet the process better. That's absolutely right, 563. Can't be a not-our-fault mentality. No one wants to accept culpability in our world today. That's a good point, because I think what Highland Park did, which is not a bad idea, and I think a great compromise, they said you can't put these sites up on, you can't put your homes up on Airbnb. If you want to do short-term rentals, we're going to do it a lot like we did with Sturgis, South Dakota. You got to know the guys. You can do it. We're not trying to get in your business, but you can't advertise it to strangers. It cannot be a party house. Now, what's happening, and it sounds like in this article, is that a lot of people in Highland Park are just finding black market ways to let people know that their house is for rent. And that's how party houses are coming online. But as some people pointed out, they said, listen, I wouldn't be able to afford this house if I didn't have the ability to make money off of it. Not long-term, short-term. If I can, just like you said, with Sturgis, South Dakota, a third of the year for 2 weeks? Let's say that he lives in that house the entire other 50 weeks of the year. He is bankrolled. He has helped himself. He has found a way to stay afloat when our property taxes and our interest rates and our monthly nut has gone up, right? I get what Craig is saying. I'm not sure that that's the case. I'm not sure that anyone is going to buy or not buy a place based on whether or not there's a rental property next door. Maybe that is the case. I think we don't have the kind of situations that you see in California or you see in Tahoe, which isn't California, but Nevada. But Tahoe's a great example. That is a vacation destination town. If you go into the subdivisions of Tahoe, almost every single house that is on the strip is made to be a rental. Everything about it, down to the lock on the door, to the way that the couch is set up, they made those houses to be rentals. So if Craig is in that town and you go and you're like, I think I'll buy a place next door, you have to know that you're buying into that's what's there. You know, a lot of skiers and things like that are coming through. In Buffalo Grove, I'm not sure that that's what's happening. I'm not sure someone's going to buy or not buy a property based on the fact that the person who lives next door sometimes rents it out short term. I just don't know. 630 says you can't fight the money, so just overregulate it. Issue tickets, excessive fines. It's not a bad idea. I think that, like every new technology and how it affects our life, makes us think differently about the way we live, we're going to focus on the best and the worst, and never in the middle. Because of, there must be a big click rate on Airbnb party house stories. Because it seems like when you go to the Sun-Times and Tribune, there are a lot of stories, and you would think possibly that it's out of whack with everything else that's happening in the city. It's probably not. But there's probably a high click rate. They realize writing about this, could it be happening next to you? Therefore, you're more likely to think that you hear the words Airbnb and you automatically think rap video. That's not necessarily the case. But like we said, it's just a pendulum swing segment. This is where I see it both ways. Personally, I look for Airbnbs wherever I go. I'm a traveler. If I'm traveling with more than just my small family, if it's with friends or with other family members, we would much rather do that than go to a hotel. And I'm not top of mind being respectful of my neighbors when I get an Airbnb. Because a couple of years ago, we got, you know, 7 or 8 people from my comedy group to come together in LA for an event, and we got a great place with a pool. We all had, you know, everyone had a room and it was all great, but I wasn't thinking, oh, it's 10 o'clock, guys, lights out, or it's 10 o'clock, turn the music down. We're no guns and drugs and stuff, but it was, you know, we're out there and I paid for the right to sit poolside until I want to go inside. Didn't think once about the person who might be living on the other side of that fence. And maybe that's the problem, but I also feel that I'm a respected member of society, and I'm not sure that I was, you know, taking it up to 11, you know, on the Led Zeppelin. Oh, is it 11:30? Turn it up! No, we were, you know, I think we were respectful in that regard, but I didn't think about it. That's the point. So I see it both ways, but I wonder if an outright ban is overstepping when it comes to municipalities, because you're just trying to keep people out, a certain riffraff that is trying to look for party houses, and you're taking away your community's ability to make money. So I don't know. Fantastic idea, 773 says. Short-term stay, long-term stay, which is 60 plus days. Airbnb is very good idea to make money. When you're staying, you have to stay with where are you staying when the guests are in town? Is your stay costing you more money than renting your house? I don't know what's fantastic about that idea. I don't even know if that's an idea. There's a lot of words there. But, yeah, if you're not making money, then you're not going to do it. I think it's more about the fact that maybe this is a vacation house, or maybe it's a second house, or maybe it's you're just renting it out and you're trying to make some cash while you're out of town. Maybe you're going to stay. Maybe you're just sleeping on the beach in Highland Park. Highland Park is one of those great communities where you can't go to the beach if you don't live there. I made that mistake one year when it was summer, and I'm like, went up the North Shore, and I'm like, let's stop here. And they're like, no, no. So when you have that much, when you're that tight on your beachfront, my guess is you're probably going to be tight on short-term rentals as well. 312-981-7200. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. A couple other ideas for some reunions for sitcoms. But I want to talk about what we teased out at the beginning of the show about arts criticism. We kind of talked about this yesterday, too. The city of Chicago has named 2020 the year of Chicago music. They did this Monday. I think they had a big press conference, right, down at the Cultural Center. Then it was 2 days later that Greg Kot announced he's taking the buyout of the Chicago Tribune, and the chief critic, probably the best in the country, is gone. Can you be a great Chicago music town without critics, without people writing about it? Maybe we don't need critics. But what will the impact be if you're trying to say to Nashville, to Austin, to Minnesota, to other cities in the area, no, we are the capital. We are the music capital. When we don't have a reviewer at any of the papers. 312-981-7200. We'll talk about that coming up next here in 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here, 312-981-7200. Let's keep going on the Airbnb since I got Ken on the line. Ken's in Lake Geneva.
Yeah, Ken from Lake Geneva.
I love it. How you doing, bud?
Hey. I just want to tell you, yeah, I've been a broker for 40 years in rentals and things, but I'm in Lake Geneva, and I'm going to tell you something. All they want is the revenue out of this crap.
Ah, that's it, right.
That's all they want is revenue. They're going to start, they're losing the hotel tax.
That's why they're making a big stink about it.
And now they want everything inspected. There's going to be an inspection fee. Hmm. There's going to be, how much did you make on it? It's revenue.
And it is interesting, too, because I went down the rabbit hole, Ken. You like this? Because I get a press release sent to me all the time from an Airbnb watch group that is just telling me. It just sends me a bunch of articles from around the country of Airbnb horror stories. And I just kept going down and kept clicking through to their website. And then I found out they're sponsored by the hotels. That's the whole idea. The hotels don't want Airbnb around.
Oh, no, no, because they're losing revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, big time. But what these cities want is, I've been a rental owner for 40 years. Every time someone moves out of a rental unit, you got to have it inspected. Yeah, it's a fee.
It's a fee.
Yeah, right. And then as soon as the utilities are changed, they get it. But no, they want
the hotel tax
revenue, especially now that they're trying to do this in Lake Geneva. And, of course, there's going to be an inspection on the – as soon as they go into your house, oh, they're going to find this defect and that defect. And it's never going to end.
Yeah.
So the last thing you want to do is – but, yeah, it's all revenue. They want to tax you and collect the revenue.
Dan, thanks for calling in. That's good points. Good points. They're not going to you know what they're not going to find in my house? A broken garbage disposal. Because today I got it fixed. Almost did it myself, everybody. Almost. But I ended up getting a plumber. I know. A story for another day. I was so close. Pete, I was so close. I was like, oh, I've got a screwdriver. I could do this. My wife had to talk me out of it. Which is probably true, because it would have taken 5 seconds for me to break something, and then we found there was actually a leak in the pipe, so anyway. Sopranos, 608 says, that reunion would be a real hit. And you could do it that. You could do a Sopranos, because the last moment of that show is when James Gandolfini is supposedly killed. I didn't want to give away the whole series, but it's been a couple of years. The point being that they could move on with the actors that aren't James. But it might be tough to do a reunion without him since he was such a central figure. That's the problem. And it's not a remake. We're not talking about a remake where it's Soprano's prequel. Remember when Tony Soprano was 12? You know, not one of those. We're talking about it's a Friends reunion that HBO Max is putting out. So all the original cast coming back together to do an unscripted project. Right now, I think it was Hollywood Reporter, one of the sites quoted, each cast member is going to get $4 million to do this one project. One episode, it's probably going to be more like a movie. Or, as we worry, a talkback. What was it like to be on Friends? Phoebe? Oh, it was great. It was great. Courtney? Yeah, it was great. David?
Hated it.
No, we want to know what you think would be a great show to reunite, a show that you loved at any time frame. 312-981-7200. Earlier, we talked about banning cashless stores. Before that, the fiasco at Lincoln Park High School. Coming up in the next hour, my guest is Molly Melman, one of the partners at the restaurant group Let Us Entertain You. And we continue to get your thoughts on what old sitcoms you would like to see reunite. Just got a text from MASH. Again, a tougher one to do because a lot of those actors aren't with us anymore. But MASH. Prequel? They're in World War II instead of Korea? I don't know how that would work. All right, this week, the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events for the city, they declared that 2020 was a year of Chicago music. They had a big press conference. Bunch of musicians talking, what we like to hear. And then just 2 days later, the biggest music critic, quite possibly in the country, called it quits. Greg Kot took the offered buyout from the Chicago Tribune. They're trying to get rid of a bunch of salary. Anyone who had more than 8 years experience was offered a buyout from the company. Greg took it. There's no word whether or not he will be replaced. Kot will join a long line of arts journalists who have left their posts in the last couple of years. Most media companies are cutting down on arts and culture coverage. And in Chicago, you'd be hard-pressed to find, what, more than one or two pages of coverage in any of the local dailies? Maybe sans the Reader. But if you go to a show at Metro or the Vic, the Hideout on a Saturday night, the bands are playing to packed rooms. And Steppenwolf or Broadway in Chicago or your favorite theater, their latest stage shows are probably sold out. Do you need reviews? Do you need critics to write about arts and culture for arts and culture to survive? Could we just survive with calendar listings when your favorite artist is coming to town? And just no criticism, no reviews? But I'll be the first to say that argument, I mean, reviews do help. But I think of some of the great writers in town. I think of Greg. Greg Kot was great. But right now, Greg Kot, Jim DeRogatis, who no longer writes for the Sun-Times. He writes, now he's doing more books and long-form stuff. Think of the great theater critics in town who have had a hard time finding jobs. The great movie reviewers in town. I'm not sure if movies are going to be a thing in the future. But the question is, are newspapers and magazines and other places, are they right? Are we at a point where arts and culture can survive without arts and culture criticism? Or maybe we're not reading it. Maybe we're not clicking through. We're more interested in the Airbnb stories. 312-981-7200. Let's talk about it. I, for one, would think that my favorite thing about an arts critic, Richard Roper comes to mind, or Chris Jones, is when they go off and they're not necessarily doing a review of a movie or a stage show, or in Greg's case, a review of a music show. It's when they take on trends or they take on the larger ticket things that are happening in their discipline, their genre. They talk to me about why theater matters or why music matters and that kind of stuff. That to me is better, right? But I don't know. I find it hard to make an argument that Chicago is a great arts and culture town and that it's a great music town when the media that supports this town doesn't allocate any resources to cover it. So do you say, Well, you know what? It's a great arts and culture town for the fact that a lot of artists live here. But it's not worth covering? Is that possible? I don't know. 870 says they will not replace the music critic. The whole reason that a buyout is lower payroll. It'll be cheaper to add clickbait to the website. 870, my question back to you, and you can text or call in, is are you okay with that? Because it seems like they're not wrong to do that. You would talk to any arts and culture. I remember I ran a website. I used to work at public radio, and I was behind the scenes, and I would see the analytics of websites. And we had all this different coverage, and you'd have news, and you'd have politics, and science reporting, and you would have sports, and you would have arts. And it was always so heartbreaking that the arts and culture stuff was at the bottom of the list. It paled in comparison to the entertainment stuff, it paled in comparison to the breaking news stuff. The arts and culture stuff just didn't get as many clicks. And in this day and age, when clicks are what moves the needle, can you blame the Chicago Tribune for saying, hey, you know what, we got to put more resources where the clicks are at? 312-981-7200 is a phone number. I don't know. Chicago is an unbelievable music town. I love it. And we have such great musicians in town and met a lot of them and had them on this show. And they're able, I think, in a new world order, to be able to use the technology and the social media platforms that are provided to them to reach out to their own like-minded and rabid fans. I think of bands like Superchunk. Great, we had them on, an indie rock band out of, I think, North Carolina. They're not a band that's going to get a review for their new record. They've been around long enough that they know that they're going to get a solid fan base that's going to come to Thalia Hall or to the Vic or wherever they're playing. We had Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall on. Was it 2 weeks ago? At a certain point, I walked in there and it was sold out. But I didn't see any Bruce McCullough stories in the Tribune or features that were in the Sun-Times, right? He was, because he was Kids in the Hall and because he had his own Twitter following and he has his own ability to get the word out, fans came out. Let's go to Tony. Tony, you're the one to text in, 870.
Yeah, I don't think that we need someone to discover new music.
Right.
And if you don't have a critic who knows what he's doing, who's out at the shows, you don't have that.
Right. It's so true. I wonder how many young people, though, and I think of when you were young and when I was young, that we were getting our information about what the hip, cool band was from the Chicago Tribune.
Well, I got it from newspapers. I also got it from Circus, Rock and Power,
right.
All those things. And those are all gone.
They're all gone. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Thanks,
Tony.
The
only thing is blood. Okay, thanks.
No, I didn't mean to cut them off. Jefferson's back on the air. Jefferson, you got something to say about this.
My main man, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you? Happy Friday.
Okay. You know, it's kind of a conversation me and some of the guys at the health club were having just a couple weeks ago. You know, I think what it is, Justin, I think it's a decline of culture, period, right? I mean, no offense, I don't call packing, what's that place, Hideout.
Right.
I don't really think that's emblematic of culture.
Right.
But I know nobody anymore who goes to the opera. They may go to the movies. And you know what? The whole toy phone, right? The mobile phone and nobody reads the newspaper anymore. I'm 48 years old. I've read the reader for 35 years, and that's coming to a close only because of the ideology of the reader versus my personal ideology.
Sure.
People in their 30s. I mean, when I was in college at Loyola, you couldn't wait to Thursday night to get the reader when it was 2 inches thick, because that's how you planned your weekend.
Yeah, it's also
right?
How you found out about music and who was coming to town. They had the ads in the papers. Great.
Absolutely. Illinois Entertainer was another one. Yeah. I don't even know if they still print that. I mean,
think they do, but they don't do it like they at the frequency they used to.
Yeah, I mean, you could go on and on. People don't collect things anymore. They don't entertain at home. There's just the dress codes of people, what people wear to work today, even what they wear to a funeral. Yeah. It's a gradual demise, and most people just don't care. And it's not their livelihood, so they have no loyalty or allegiance to what people like Mr. Cott do for a living, because it just doesn't involve them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jefferson, thanks, buddy. Have a great weekend. Yeah, that might be the crux, the core of it. Are we losing our culture? As Jefferson points out, there used to be a point where we, as a collective unit, regardless of your ideology, were reaching out trying to find like-minded people or like-minded art that you can go to and hang out or be a part of. Is that still happening? I'm sure it's still happening. I hesitate. The only thing I hesitate, Jefferson, is that we're sounding like our ages. That I'm sure. I think back to my day of standing in line. I remember this in 1992 or so, standing in line outside of the Metro to see the Smashing Pumpkins play a secret show that was announced on XRT. Or standing in line, and I'm sure many people did this, standing in line at the record store at midnight. Remember that, when you stand in line at Rose Records? I think I was waiting for Guns N' Roses, I think it was. I'm not, Use Your Illusion. And I think later in life it was the Beastie Boys. Remember, we used to do those things. We used to surround who we were based on the culture. And I think that critics, and like you said, I think it was Ken before him talking about, you know, just this idea that there were so many different places, whether it was Circus Magazine or Spin or Rolling Stone or the papers, that we could find so many different places to find new music. And now you can go to Pitchfork and to some of the blogs, and obviously there's still a robust music scene that's happening on a national level. But in Chicago, where? Tell me where. But Kenny's kind of on the same vein, where maybe we're just getting too old, huh, Kenny? What do you think, Kenny?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I feel like I've seen more shows than ever the last few years, because there's just such great apps like Bands in Town, and they let you know about who's coming in and who's related to the artists you like. And I've seen so many small shows at the Envy Bottle and at Martyrs and at the Bottom Lounge that I probably would never seen without new technology.
I was going to say, how are you finding out about it? Without a critic, without a newspaper that's covering it daily, where do you go find it?
I use Bands in Town, the app, and I also, I'm a subscribe to allmusic.com, and Discogs is another one.
So you're finding sites and other technologies that are filling the void where newspapers can't do it anymore.
Oh, totally. And I still read the Reader, but, like, honestly, it's finding the Reader and, like, flipping through it every week on Thursday nights is more of a chore than anything now with Fans in Town. So
yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Kenny. Thanks for that, man. 312-981-7200. 630 says the community in finding out the up-and-coming bands and current culture has all moved to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, even for Chicago locally. YouTube has plenty of critics doing reviews. Maybe that's it. Maybe, you know what? I'm going to take a break here because I'm running late and I want to come back and talk. Maybe that's it. Maybe not unlike all the conversations we've been having in the last couple days. Maybe music criticism and arts and culture conversation is moving to different platforms. Platforms maybe we're not on. 312-981-7200 is phone number. Stay with us. 312-981-7200, talking about if Chicago is truly a music town, why are we not covering music in the daily newspapers? Greg Kot took a buyout, and there's concern that the Chicago Tribune will not replace him as a music critic, one of the more premier critics. And the question is brought up so thoughtfully tonight by a lot of our listeners and our callers and our texters. It's this idea that maybe the world is shifting in this world, too. I just got Cherie just asked, you know, don't you think it's all about the music blogger now? There are plenty of music bloggers in Chicago that are working and bringing creative voices to music. Isn't that the new wave? Even beyond bloggers. Now it's like we just heard from 630, YouTube. Plenty of critics doing YouTube vlogs. Is it time that we just say, hey, you know what? That's where you're going to get your music. You're going to do it like some of our callers have called in. Kenny called in saying, I didn't go to the Tribune for who's coming to town. I go to all bands. Or I go to other places that are going to give me a list, a calendar. And I'm going to discover for myself because I'm of sound mind and body. Yes, I agree. I just wonder, though, because the newspapers, and I say that, and that word is such a charged word, but they almost were a way to bring together and bridge different genres or demographics or different generations. If Greg Cott is writing about Beach Money, great band from Chicago that just 2 years ago were performing live in our studio here, and he's telling us about Beach Bunny. He's telling people who may not care necessarily about indie rock, maybe people who do care about indie rock but aren't going out to see Beach Bunny at a house party, or maybe 14-year-old kids who want to be turned on to new music. And people like Greg Cott or the critics that were at the major newspapers, they became bridges. They were the cultural bridges. Sometimes you feel like you don't belong watching a YouTuber do a review show. It's not for you. Or using an app that is obviously speaking a language that may not resonate with you. 708 says, I listen to radio stations for new music. Maybe. I think radio stations are another. I think there are some in town in Chicago that are very independent and very cool. I think of Chirp Radio, and I think of some of the others that are doing great stuff in Chicago. But there's also, you know, radio stations have lost that power because there are so many different ways to get music now. They're in the same position where it used to be a curator, it used to be a DJ that would say, hey, you got to listen to this record. Bob Surratt saying, hey, you got to listen to this record. That's just not the case anymore. More often than not, we're asking our Spotify friends, you know, or different users or the platforms themselves to recommend stuff. I can't tell you on Apple Music. I'm an Apple Music guy. Well, I sometimes just put on the new music channel and let it spin in the background while I'm, you know, doing the dishes or something like that. So maybe that's just the way of the future, but I do still think there's a place for curators. Maybe the curators have taken a backseat to the music. Maybe we don't need to know the curators' names. Greg was an amazing name and we loved it, but at the end of the day, we loved what he was writing about because he was writing about bands that we liked or didn't like or shows that we saw with him, things like that. Over time, those personalities became larger than life, or at least became personalities. Maybe the future is that the brand is the personality, and we're not necessarily attached to who's writing it. Apple, Spotify, Pitchfork, bands, I think all the different sites that are curating that you don't actually know who's doing the curating, but you trust the brand and you trust that they have people who know what they're talking about. Maybe that's the future. But I like the cultural bridge, and I'll miss it. If the Tribune decides not to replace someone who's and I think that's the way to look at it, someone who is who can speak to non-music lovers, speak to people who may not be in the demographics who are going to the Rib to see Cage the Elephant or whatever it might be, and at the same time be able to respect and give you the story on why this band is important or why this musician is important. I think it's cool. So we'll see what happens at the Tribune coming up. 312-981-7200. All right, Molly Melman's here. She's going to join us, talk about Let Us Entertain You and RPM Seafood. Make a shift to talk about restaurants. Melman, of course, one of the siblings, one of the daughter of Rich Melman, the sister of RJ and Jared, and she is making a name for herself as part of the Melman dynasty. So we'll talk with Molly Melman coming up next on 720 WGN. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Let Us Entertain You restaurant empire got a little bigger this past month with the opening of RPM Seafood on the Chicago Riverwalk. Bill and Juliana Rancic teamed up with the Melman siblings to add RPM Seafood to the collection that includes RPM Steak and RPM Italian. The restaurant got great reviews, and it's just the latest downtown gem to the lettuce portfolio. It was just 2 years ago that the famed restaurant group run by Rich Melman change leadership. Rich handed the reins over to his son, RJ. And we had RJ and Jared, the Melman brothers, in the studio not too long ago, and they both said the secret to their success, well, their sister Molly. Molly Melman prefers to be behind the scenes rather than upfront and personal, but that's changing. The former school teacher came back into the fold a few years back to take what she learned away from the company and apply it to the family business. Molly Melman, my guest in studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having
me. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So congrats on the restaurant. This was an undertaking to be able to, and part of really a whole project that's happening there on the Riverwalk. How is it going in the first week of this restaurant being open, and how do you feel about the whole concept of being on the Riverwalk?
It's been incredible. It's going really well. We just opened the top level. We like to open kind of in slow phases. So the whole 40,000 square foot project opened over the course of several months, but mm-hmm. the final restaurant just opened.
Why slow phases? What's the advantage?
Be under control when we can. So, you know, doing too many things at once, I think we'd be running around a little too crazy. So when I can remember looking at this project when we first signed on to do it, thinking, oh my God, how are we going to do all these levels? And we're going to be running around. We are running around a little bit, but it was nice. We opened the river level first this past summer, and then the event level, and then the seafood restaurant just opened.
Just even listening to you talk about it, there has to be strategy and plans in everything that you do. If you're opening a restaurant, the idea of doing it rushed is the death knell, really, because restaurants are a difficult business to be in. Is that some of the secret to the success of your family business is long-term planning and thinking about how you're going to release these restaurants to the public?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we looked at the plans, and we knew that the river level just with construction would be ready first. So, you know, to think of that as one little piece of this giant puzzle made it a lot easier, and that we knew that we could have our whole team focusing on that. Get that running, you know, because in a new restaurant, systems are not in place, so you're running around. So getting that open first really helped kind of settle everything and helped us organize the restaurant and the back of house and the inventory and all that. So that when we opened the next level, we already felt like we had an established restaurant underneath. Yeah.
Molly Melman's with me. She's one of the partners in RPM Seafood and also part of the Let Us Entertain You team. I'm fascinated about just the restaurant business in general. You got into it, and when you got into it, you kind of brought training to the full. That's what you brought back after you. And I want to talk about where you were before. Maybe we start there.
Yeah.
You started, you wanted to be a school teacher.
Why
stay with that? Yeah.
When I graduated from school, I had worked in the restaurants growing up just from having grown up with it, and I had hosted and served throughout high school and college. And I kind of wanted something that was my own, something that my last name meant absolutely nothing, and I could just kind of do my own thing. So when I graduated, I applied for Teach for America. I'd seen it on one of my friend's away messages on AIM randomly, and I was like, that looks interesting. So I applied, and I got in. I never expected to get in, and I moved to New York, and I taught kindergarten. An extremely hard experience, but an amazing experience. And when I moved back to Chicago, RJ and Jared, my brothers, were just getting ready to open up Hub 51, which was their first restaurant. And they had hired a bunch of really young hosts, and they kind of just needed some help at the host stand. So I was like, I don't know what I'm doing now. I'm back. I'll help out. Why not? So I started hosting there, and I served there for a while. And at that point, I went through the full training class, and I kind of just saw some things that we could maybe add based off of what I had learned from teaching and my teaching background in New York. And so I can remember I had a long conversation. I was still living at home trying to figure out my life. And I would go home and my dad wanted to just pick my brain and say, what did you learn? How was it? So I started kind of talking about some of the philosophies I had learned through teaching. And at that point, I sat down with the training team. And there was an amazing training team already in place. But we sat down and I started kind of looking at some of the materials and thinking about how we could adjust it and change it and make it a little bit more relevant and a little bit more hands-on.
So a little bit more now.
That's
a big problem in the restaurant industry is you have training videos and training procedures that are from the 80s and 90s, life has changed.
Yeah. Exactly. We'd been around since, you know, at that point for about 40 years, and things hadn't really been updated too much. So myself and several other trainers sat down, and we kind of reworked a lot of the training materials. And then at that point, I kind of realized that it was a really cool opportunity to merge my background in teaching with the restaurants.
I was going to say, what from teaching kindergarten do you bring to the restaurant experience?
I would think.
I would think they're nothing alike. But what are they? I mean, is it timeouts?
A lot of people go into service because they don't want to sit at a desk and read binders worth of materials. So same like with kindergartners, you can't just sit there and give them a book to read, right? You have to do kind of a lot more hands-on activities. So in terms of the materials, a lot of it was written in these big, big binders. And I said, you know, a lot with what people are serving tables, they're, you know, they're moving around. Right. They're not used to sitting at a desk. Let's make it a lot more hands-on. There's one phrase that they use in Teach for America that's I do, we do, you do, meaning the teacher will show you how to do something. We'll do it together as a group, and then you'll show me that you know how to do it. And that was kind of a philosophy that we started using with Lettuce, where we're like, okay, let's make sure everything that they do, whether it's opening a bottle of wine, I'm going to show you the technique that we use here. We'll all do it at the same time. We'll do it together, and then you'll show me that you know how to do it at a table. So we kind of incorporated a lot more interaction.
Yeah, it seems completely smart. I would never have thought of that. Molly Melman is in studio, one of the Melman siblings in the Let Us Entertain You, I guess you'd call it Empire Restaurant Company, that owns so many great restaurants in downtown Chicago, including RPM Seafood, which just opened up with Bill and Julianne Rancic partnering with the Melman siblings. And we're talking about Molly Melman and your approach to being a restaurateur, because coming in and doing training is one thing, but making that transition to having your name on the list and being one of the partners and opening up restaurants, that's another thing. Was that the goal all along when you came back from teaching, where you're like, you know what, this is great, the training, but my goal is to be at the top of the chain?
No, not at all. I can remember feeling like when I first started at Hub with my brothers as my bosses, I felt like I'm never going to catch up to them. And they wanted to make sure that I wasn't just going to be given, you know, what they had already earned.
Right,
yeah,
right,
I had to earn
right.
it. And that was fine. I was one that wanted to show that I could earn my way there. So when Jared, who is the middle sibling, he said to me, you know, when I went into management, I had to close Osteria Viestado every night for an entire year. So you have to do that too. I said, great, cool.
And so, you closed Hub 51 for
and we had a nightclub downstairs too at the time, so that was the 4 a.m. shift, you know, so you're leaving. I started at 4 p.m., left at 4 a.m. every day, and it was fine. I was happy to do it, just to kind of show that I was willing to put in whatever work they wanted me to.
And I would say that beyond just showing your brothers, that's the advice you would give people who want to get in the restaurant business,
yeah.
Right? They got to know that you can do any job in a restaurant for at least a year before you decide what you're going to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think at that point, I knew that I liked being in the restaurant. I knew that being around the energy and the excitement was wonderful for me, especially having come from teaching where every day was kind of monotonous. I loved that part of it. But I also knew that I didn't want to become a GM. That wasn't the route I wanted to do. So for me, it gave me a good opportunity when I went into the training side of things to be able to do something that was a little bit different, where I wasn't just trying to catch up to my brothers who were 2 or 6 years ahead of me, that I could kind of make my own path.
Molly Melman is with us. She, of course, one of the siblings over at Let Us Entertain You. RJ is now the head, and he's the oldest brother, right?
Yeah.
And then there's Jared, and then there's Molly Melman, who I kind of said at the beginning, you didn't like being up front, and I got that information from your brothers, who were like, you know, hey, when Molly's the one who gets all the job done, she's the one who does all the work, she just doesn't like the glitz of being in front of the microphones. Is that true, or were they just kind of like just taking credit for your work?
No, I mean, I'm always hesitant. I'm happy to do interviews, I'm happy to do things with them, but it's always a group thing. So thank you for having me solo.
There you go.
Step away from them.
Molly Melman, my guest. We're talking about RPM Seafood tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Molly Melman, the restaurateur, is in studio with me tonight. She's one of the partners in the new RPM Seafood, which is on the Chicago Riverwalk. Of course, you may recognize her name because she is one of the Melmans with her brothers, RJ and Jared, that are running Let Us Entertain You, the company that their dad, Rich Melman, founded. To be a part of Let Us Entertain You, a company that you grew up with, I mean, working in the restaurants, but just being a part of your daily life, what does it mean to you to see what Let Us Entertain You means to not just Chicago, everywhere, but mainly Chicago?
It makes me feel really proud. It makes me want to work even harder. I think, you know, something that my brother Jared and I do is we interview every single person that we hire for our restaurants in the front of house. So we do all manager interviews, all server interviews, all bartender and hosts. And something that people say a lot is that we've heard good things about Let Us Entertain You, and you know, I have friends that have worked with you guys, and I'm just excited to have the opportunity. And you know, I think there's a pressure that people expect certain things, but it makes me really proud of the team that we can show people that, hey, this is a, an exciting company to work for.
The team, we talk about your brothers, and you have taken a lettuce in a different direction. You think of some of the great lettuce entertainment restaurants like RJ Grunt's or Maggiano's or other places like that that have just been the staples in Chicago. But you can't go two doorsteps in on Hubbard Street without coming up on the hottest new place that is a lettuce place, whether it be Bub City or Three Dots and a Dash or what we're even seeing with RPMs. Is that the goal? Is the goal to take the company into 2020 and to be a different kind of restaurant than maybe what your dad did?
I wouldn't say the goal is to be different. I think we're constantly looking at what we're excited about and what we like. You know, everything for us always starts with the food. And if we start with a concept that we're genuinely excited about, then it makes it a lot more fun to work on. So, you know, for us, it's about creating opportunities for people that work with us. And we've got some amazing people that are climbing with us. And it's just cool to be able to give them a chance to do things.
The restaurant business has changed drastically, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years, where it's gotten so much more intense. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the competition alone, as it seems like so many more restaurant groups are in the business. Do you guys recognize that? I mean, you've always kind of been the top dog, but now there seems to be a bunch of people who want that mantle.
Sure. I mean, I think it's good to have that. You know, it keeps everyone on their toes and it keeps everyone working hard to make sure that you're being the best. But, you know, our internal mantra is just that we want to be the best that we can be, that we're almost more competitive with ourselves. If we have something down the street that we're working on, we want to make sure everyone's in good shape before we open the next place.
The restaurant industry, not just in Chicago, but all over the world, is a renowned boys club. And it has the same issues that you'll find in media, that you'll find in entertainment and other places. And we've seen some of that kind of rear its head in Chicago. When you're talking about implementing new training and new rules and being at the top of Let Us Entertain You, do you have to think about that in 2020 to make sure that it's a safe and protected place to work? And really, now that your name is on the mantle?
Yeah, for sure. And it's something I think about with the women that work with us, that I want to make sure that everyone has a voice. We started a program, myself and several of the other women leaders, we started a program called The Row Club, named after one of our female partners who passed away. But she was incredible at having that voice. And it's a good opportunity for women to kind of stick together and learn that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for them, too.
I just thinking about it off the top of my head, I mean, there's some great chefs. Women chefs who are really dominating in Chicago. But when you get to the management of restaurants, restaurateurs, it's still male-dominated across the board. Some of the best restaurant companies in Chicago, it's all guys. Do you notice that? Is that something that you pay attention to, that there aren't as many women when you get to your level running restaurant companies in Chicago?
I guess I don't really think about it that way, because we have some incredible women that work with us, too. And some of the people on our team, our director of operations is a woman, and she's an incredible mentor, and she's just wonderful to work with. So, yeah, I mean, I think obviously the lifestyle presents a problem, because you're working when everyone else is at home, and, you know, you're working late hours. But I think that for me, if women want to do it, then there's every chance for them to be able to do it. So, you know, the more women there are out there that are kind of showing that that's an opportunity, it's good.
Yeah. Molly Melman is in studio with us. She's one of the restaurateurs at Let Us Entertain You. Her and her brothers, her siblings, run the company. RJ's taken over. Has he got a big ego now?
We like to call him El Presidente, and, you know, he knows the answer to everything anyway. So, no, he's humble. He's good.
I was going to say, is this the succession for restaurants? Are you guys like the siblings in that HBO show?
I haven't watched that show, but, you know, I've heard that we should watch it.
You should, right. Yeah. We mentioned the Hubbard Street and downtown. Wow, it has just completely changed. Do you see in the next 10 years it changing more? Are you have to look 10 years down the line to say, okay, you know what, everything is jumping right now in the Riverwalk or maybe down on Hubbard Street, but, you know, we're really looking at this area because this is going to be the next thing and we want to be the first ones there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being where we're at, people present opportunities all the time. And if you looked at the river 4 years ago, I mean, no one would have ever thought that there would be restaurants along there, let alone people walking around, you know, any of that stuff. So, yeah, we're constantly looking at new areas and new opportunities to kind of branch out a little bit. But selfishly, the nice thing is that most of our restaurants are in a walking,
yeah, right,
two block radius. So,
is that part of the job? Do you have to think about what's next?
Not for me. That's yeah. RJ. That's the RJ's president's job. Role. Yeah, RJ, and we have a whole team that scout out areas, and they're constantly looking. We're just starting to branch out. Not just starting to, but we're expanding into Austin and Florida mm-hmm. and just kind of thinking about other opportunities.
I was gonna say, that's the next phase. You guys have had success before in being in different markets, and that's not new for Let Us Entertain You, but there are new markets are coming online all the time. Do you see that being Let Us being one of the companies that competes nationally, that is one of the best restaurant companies in America? Or do you particularly have a focus on Chicago?
You know, that's never, our goal is never to be the biggest, or we don't think like that. We like to grow organically. And if we open in Austin and it goes well, then we might think about other opportunities to grow there. Being in a new city, it's always good to have a couple other restaurants around you just to have that kind of internal support. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we like to grow slow and steady and kind of stay in the same, you know, expansion rate that we've always done. And if it goes well, then we'll continue to do that.
The future for you, you're going to stay in this business? Is this it? Or are you going to, in a year, you're going to go, oh man, I got to get back to these kindergarten kids?
No, definitely not going back. No offense to the kindergartners, because they were wonderful and I learned so much, but I love it. I think, you know, we talk about this when we do those interviews with new hires, and you oftentimes, if you're thinking about what you love about a job, it's the people that you work with. And we're so lucky that we have such an amazing team of people that we get to work with every day. So when you're on the floor and you're working and everyone's smiling and things are working well and it's a smooth shift, there's nothing better to me.
RPM Seafood is the newest gem in the Let Us Entertain You empire. And in studio, Molly Melman, who is one of the Melman siblings, along with Jared and RJ. And they are continuing to bring great restaurants to Chicago. Molly, thanks so much for being my guest.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, and continued success.
You got to come see us at the restaurant.
708 says, any recommendation of lettuce restaurants that for those of us who don't make a lot of money, are there lettuce places close to Evergreen Park and Oak Lawn? I don't know. That's a good question. I would say maybe not close to down in Evergreen Park or Oak Lawn. Maybe go downtown. But they have options. It surprises me, and it was great to have Molly here. It surprises me how deep the breadth of the restaurants are. Meaning you can go restaurants like Maggiano's, I mentioned. That's a great place, Italian place. Or Big Bowl. You don't even remember that Big Bowl is a Let Us Entertain You place. Or you look at the hot restaurants, ABBA, which you can't get a reservation at in Fulton District. That's a Let Us Entertain You place. RPM Seafood, which we just talked about. So they kind of run the gamut where there's going to be your staple favorites that are going to be family style, like Maggiano's or Big Bowl, to the stuff that you get dressed up to go to. It's a great question. I was just looking at their list, their restaurant search page, to help you out. And there were so many different places. It's amazing to look at how many restaurants they actually have. I can't even name how many there are. They're like 80 or something like that. But it made me think about restaurants. Maybe this is a good question to talk to you guys about what you look for in a restaurant. Because there's so much being made about service, making sure that you get great service. There's so much made about, of course, the food, what kind of food and the organic nature of it, or the freshness of it, or the high quality of it. And there's a ton made of the ambiance, right? The vibe. What color are the walls? What kind of music are they playing? And then at the end of the day, probably the most important thing for me is price. How much you willing to shell out? 312-981-7200. Let's rank those. Why don't we do that? 312-981-7200. What are you looking for in a restaurant? Price, service, food, ambiance. Rank them 1 through 4 for me. I'll go first. 312-981-7200. I would say the number one thing that I would look for in a restaurant, number one would be price. Probably that's important too. If it's way too expensive, I'm anxious. I'm not the kind of guy who goes to a restaurant and is like, oh, you know what? It's okay. Get another box. I'm always got the little beads of sweat about how much I'm doing short form division in my head. Trying to add everything up. Combine, how much is that going to be? What's that? The appetizer? Oh, geez, $150. What, you know, that kind of thing. I would say 2 would be the food. 3 would be the service. 4 would be the ambiance. 312-981-7200. Do you agree with that? I agree. That's nice. Mine is price, food, service. Ambiance fourth. I'll eat in a hole in the wall place. Pete Zimmerman, what would you do? Pete, of course, our great producer here. Pete, if you had to pick to rank these things one through four, price, service, food, and ambiance.
Food.
One, it's food. Okay. Smart.
Service.
It's a restaurant. Service.
Ambiance. Price.
Wow, price is fourth.
Vegan.
Vegan is fifth. That's right. That's right. All right. That's good. Wow. He's going price. He doesn't care. Splurge. The whole bit. I have a, like for, I don't know what it is, but I am so excited because I go to Mariano's right around the corner here for dinner. So around 6 o'clock, 6:15 before the show starts, I'm like, oh, I'm going to head over to that grocery store, you know, because they got a lot of handmade stuff. But they have a couple sandwiches they make at lunchtime, like a turkey sandwich and a croissant. And they want $3.75 for it. $3.75. I don't know if they mark it down because at the end and it's going bad, whatever it might be. But I'm like, sold. I've been walking around so cocky in the last couple days. I'm like, I found a sandwich that is $3.75. I'm loving it. So price has to be at the top for me. 312-981-7200. What do you think? It's hard not to start with price. Pete doesn't start with price. What do you start with? I feel like we've got everybody's attention. 870 says, wait a minute. Price is number one for you? You told us about your $1,000 meal. It wasn't $1,000. It was close to that. It was at Alinea. That is the number one restaurant in the world. Forgot what I got. I got a something. I forgot what it was. I don't know if it was like a one-off check for freelance. I forgot what it was. I got a lump sum of money. Maybe it was a bonus check. Forgot what it was. And so we decided to spend it on Alinea with the wine pairing. It was great. Great experience. I'm happy. I feel good about myself. 319 says, okay, I'll go. Let's go with service. Price, number two. Ambiance, three. Unless it's cold or it smells. Said food. The food should, no matter, if the food sucks, I'm not going to go there no matter what. So food is a given. Number one, service. Number two, price. Number three, ambiance. 312 says, I agree with your order, but sometimes I switch out price for food. Then ambiance, when it's seafood or steak. Chewy asked the question, what about a restaurant rating? Would you eat at a place with a B rating? Oof. Oof. I don't know. I probably would. I'm not, you know, I'm sure there are places I eat at every day of less than a B rating. I'm glad they don't do that in Chicago. Patty, how are you, Patty?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. So what would you rank them for me for a restaurant?
It's amazing you're talking about this because my friends and I talk about this all the time.
That's great.
We've never had price as one of the criteria. It's always been the other three.
All right. So,
and we're unanimously ambiance is first, which men will never pick. But we feel like if we don't like being in the place, we don't want to go there.
That's excellent.
So ambiance is first.
Okay.
Then food, then service, and price is kind of irrelevant.
All right, maybe we take price out. Maybe it's a smarter game to take price out because maybe guys are going to get hung up on it. Like I got hung up and it was all about price. Maybe we get rid of that and we just go with ambiance, service, and food. I like it. I like your style. Ambiance first. I love it. Thank you, Patty. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
There you go. Bye. How about that? Ambiance first. Take that. 630 says good food first. Comfort second, which I guess would be ambiance. And I like some elbow room. Space? That's ambiance, right? That would fall into that category. The rest doesn't matter. 312 says clean cooks that keep their areas spotless. I don't know how you... Would you put that under ambiance or would you put that under food? Or service? You can put it under all of them. What are you talking about? and clean cooks who understand how to mix food correctly. Again, probably food. All right. 217. Ambiance is the key for me. The atmosphere is number one. Food is number two. Service is three. Price doesn't matter. Wow. You got a ton of people saying price doesn't matter. Man, maybe it's just me. I find myself avoiding. I know I said the $1,000 restaurant. I'll never live that down. It's a great experience, by the way. It's totally worth it. But when, I don't know, my wife says, I want to go to ABBA. Or I want to go to one of the places. The whole experience starts to go downhill. Because I'm like, I don't want to spend $200 on a dinner. So it doesn't matter what the ambiance. And I can't have a good time because I'm already starting to penny pinch. That's probably me. I get it. It's a personality quirk. Not a defect. A quirk. 312 says, number one, food. Number two, service. Number three, price. Number four, ambiance. That's a dude. Right? They don't say their names on this one, but as we heard from Patty, guys do not care about ambiance. So anyone who puts it fourth. But she's right. Her and her girlfriend said it, right? If they don't like being in the place, they're not going to like the experience. That is true. I may change my tune a little bit, say I might not think about price if the experience of a restaurant is awesome. If you're going into dinner theater, like the one down that we had Phil on talking about Teatro Zanzani, and they're doing that kind of stuff, and they're throwing my food up in the air and doing a little Cirque du Soleil style. Hey, I'm cool, man. I'm cool with the $25 cover charge. But that's so true. I mean, there's ambiance plays such a huge role. Maybe I have to rethink my list. Maybe put ambiance up a little bit. But you're absolutely right. If you feel like you're in a spot or you're in a place to be or you like the decor, you like what they're doing, the uniforms or the houseplants, whatever they got going on in that restaurant, you're going to go back. You're going to feel good. All right, 815 wants to play. All right, 815. Number one, service. First number one for service. Number two, food, the three, ambiance. Because they say without good service, the food and the ambiance, bad. It's a good point. Thanks, 815. 815 also says, first, waiting. I will not wait for a table. You're not ranking the negatives. That would be fourth, right? Number one thing I want in a restaurant, waiting. No waiting. Yeah, so that would be your first. Your first would be no waiting. Not wait for a table. You will not like the West Loop, my friend. There's a restaurant in the West Loop that, and I feel so bad because you want in a way to even the playing field when you're told it's a 3.5 hour wait. And the best way to do that is to laugh. Unfortunately, that's directed at the person at the desk, so you're rude. I do that. I find myself doing that where I'm like, hey, what's a... So the restaurant is Al Cheval, which is a... They've got the best cheeseburger in town, but it's a small place. And you go in there and there was a time they had the 3.5 hour wait. And I was like, ha! Like right in their face. I'm just like, I'll fight you. You want to say that to my face again? And then I realized, okay, it's not their fault. It probably is their fault. Probably isn't 3.5 hours. They just say that. So I tell the story on the radio years later. I'm not sure that's the case today because that restaurant is not the number one restaurant like it is. But every time you go by there, so you're not going to like that place, 815. 3.5. Can you imagine being told it's a 3.5 hour wait? Would you like to stay? Can we get your number? Let's see. 312 says, I agree with your order. I would switch out price for food. I think we're all different times able to switch our list around depending on what we're looking for that evening. That's true. 773 says, I want to switch it up too. One would be company you are with. Two, the food and the price tied. Ambiance goes four. Service is five. If guys didn't care about ambiance, places like Hooters, Buffalo Wild Wings, Tilted Kilt, Dave & Buster's, they wouldn't exist. And nobody ever talks about how great the food is at any of those places. That's Dave. Thanks, Dave. That's a great point. It's a different kind of ambiance. But I'm with Patty. far too often we don't care about that thing until we're there and we care. I would never pick a restaurant based on ambiance until I'm in it and I'm like, this is so cool. So that's true. 312-981-7200, the phone number. Trying to decide what the ranking, what your ranking is when it comes to going out to eat to a restaurant. The categories are food, price, ambiance, and service. Rank them 1 through 4. What's the most important that you're looking for when you're looking for a restaurant? Mine? I said price number 1. I said food 2, service 3, ambiance 4. And as Patty pointed out, who just called in, that's because I'm a dude. Dudes don't care about ambiance. And maybe I feel like this is like a billboard chart. It's moving up. Ambiance was 4th this week, number 3. Maybe I'll move it above service. But it's hard, right? Boy, oh boy. You get bad service at a restaurant, the whole experience kind of goes down. But maybe that's the way to go. Maybe I'll go price, food, ambiance, service. I can still be convinced. Shelly's going to try. Shelly, what do you like? Rank those for me.
Well, first, because I have to want to try it, or I have to already know what I'm going to be getting.
Okay.
So food, second, because it's really, I'm sorry, money, second, price, because it's really important.
Yep.
Ambiance, sort of in there with service, because service can really ruin the ambiance, but allow me to say that I'm perfectly happy with dives and joints and the like.
Right,
so
right, right.
It doesn't, I'm fine at the highest level of restaurants, but I'm perfectly happy grabbing a hot dog somewhere.
But that's still ambiance. You're still, I mean, even if it's a dive or a joint, you're cozy in that space. So ambiance does play a role.
Exactly. Right. So I'm just saying that I don't want ambiance to be defined in people's minds as a certain higher level.
Right, right. Highfalutin.
And I want to add a category, and it's sort of a sub to service or ambiance, which is hygiene.
Oh.
I mean, I don't want it to be,
you want to be
unhealthy looking.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's just a given in the convo, right? Hope to not have that on our list. Right. Thanks, Shelley. I don't know. If it's super dirty, where's that list? Let's go to Christina. Christina, what's your ranking, Christina?
Oh, dear. Okay, I was just going to say that. I'd have to put number 1 as food.
Food. That makes sense, right?
I would go anywhere if I hear that the food is really great and all that, the food is, but that also, and I don't know if I was just kind of cheating, that ties in with the cleanliness of the restaurant.
Right, okay. We're going to get a
if
given.
If I hear that in the same.
Let's just do this, Christine. Let's just say that in this scenario, cleanliness is a given. They all got A ratings, okay? Because you're right.
I think
that would make everybody's number 1. Nobody wants
a dirty
restaurant. Okay, so you can relax on everything is clean.
Yeah, food, then the price,
okay.
Because I just, if I like something, I mean, you know, unless it's like astronomical,
yeah,
then
like,
I don't know.
Like me, right.
Okay, then ambiance, because I'm there really, I don't really, I mean, it's nice to have, but I really, like I said, I focus on the food, and the ambiance is okay. If it's there, it's I appreciate it, it's nice. And last is service.
All right.
I mean, I had done that in the past, and I can't really say that years ago, maybe I had less of a tolerance for bad service, but now I just figured, just give me my food.
Yeah, it's just human error, right?
I don't ever see these people, you know, later, so I don't care. I really don't care, unless they're really, really rude. Then.
That's great. Thanks, Christina. That's great. Okay, so we've all agreed, because there's a lot of text coming in saying, you forgot cleanliness. I didn't think that, I thought that was just a given, right? That we would just take. Because 630 says number 1 should be clean bathroom. Says a lot about your restaurant. Agreed. But we're talking about, let's just say, I'm going to start again and just say, you know what? The health inspector has been through. They changed the toilet paper. They've got great soap. Hand soap smells real nice. Maybe some cool dance music that's in the bathroom for you. Then the ranking would be, do you want it to be food first? Do you want it to be ambiance first? Do you want it to be service? Or are you looking at price? 312-981-7200. We'll continue here. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 847 says, my priorities are already different. Sometimes I'm looking for lively or noisy environments. Sometimes something quiet. Sometimes it's what kind of food they serve. There's always going to be a general price limit that's overriding everything else. I won't go somewhere with terrible service, but there's a range that I can live with. Okay. I like that. 847, you better have all three. We're talking about restaurants here. You better have ambiance, food, and service. I've been in the restaurant business for 40 years. No ambiance, but food and service? Good food, good ambiance, bad service, I'm out. Good service, bad food, I'm out. I've eaten around the world, dives, five stars. Price is not an issue, but you better have all three listed above. That's what we're talking about. How would you list them? If you had to rank them for a restaurant experience that you feel you're looking for, when you talk about ambience, food, and service, price is still questionable. And I have to tell everybody, the health inspector's been there, so cleanliness is off the list. We're just going to assume for this game that it's clean. So, 312-981-7200, what would you do? How would you rank it? Ambiance, food, and service. It's good. 708. Familiarity and tradition. Are those categories? Yeah, but they are. I think that that's part of it, but they're familiar and traditional because of the three things that we just mentioned. You like the service. You like the way they treat you. That's why you keep going back. That's why it becomes tradition, right? Familiarity, because you... Again, like the service, maybe like the ambiance. So I would say those are byproducts, right? So 312-981-7200. We're also talking about tonight the story that came out this week that Friends, the great sitcom from NBC, is going to reunite. They're going to be a reunion show that's going to be on HBO Max, which I could do a whole hour rant on why there's even an HBO Max. HBO is HBO Max. It better not be it's going to be a premium service on top of a premium service. So I'm going to have to charge, I'm going to get more to watch HBO Max. Anyway, we'll table that rant for a different time. Friends is reuniting. They're going to do an unscripted show for HBO. Each one of the cast members is going to get something like $4 million. And they're going to put together, like I said, an unscripted show. So hopefully that's not a talkback. One of these David Letterman type shows where they, you know, they get Brian Gumbel to sit down with them, ask them what it was like to be on Friends. No thanks. I'm not signing up for HBO Max for that. But if it was something like unscripted, like Curb Your Enthusiasm, love to see Matthew Perry mix it up. Improv style. But it's the question tonight, which has really got everybody's attention, is what would you like to see? What reunion would you like to see? Not a remake. We've seen a lot of remakes. We saw tonight people said Cheers. But that probably the best. As someone referenced, I forgot Woody Harrelson. Earlier in the night, I was talking about how great Cheers would be to be reunited. Ted Danson, Shelley Long, Kirstie Alley, Kelsey Grammer, Bebe Neuwirth, Rhea Perlman, John Ratzenberger, George Wendt. I think that cast is amazing. Think about how famous they all are. And I forgot Woody Harrelson. They should do a live version of Cheers. That'd be so easy because they rarely ever left that bar, right? That was the whole conceit of that show. Right, so we're talking about that as well. We'll do that in the 10 o'clock hour. Someone else said Seinfeld, but I also thought that Seinfeld did an awesome job. If you do watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, one of the seasons, I forget which one it was, season six, they all came back and they did a reunion, if you will, in Curb Your Enthusiasm. Back to restaurants, how would you rank the top three things? Talking about ambiance, service, or food. Let's go to Neil. Neil, what do you think? Well, how would you rank them?
Okay, well, I'm a nutritionist, okay, and I'm a transplant patient. So eating out is kind of a bummer for me, so I have to go with the food.
Food would be one, right?
And make sure it's right.
Because it's got to be
sure
right for you. Okay.
Washed and good and cook well.
Right.
Then the ambiance and the service, you have to say that goes in and out. You get a good server, you get a bad server Monday night, you get a good one Friday night.
Yeah, right, right.
So I say food first.
Food first, okay. So food,
then it's got to be right.
Then ambiance and then service. All right.
Yes.
I like it, Neil. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
I love you, bro. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right. Always a good Friday night when you get a love you from your listener. 312-981-7200. I'm with it. I'm surprised, and maybe I'm just living in a fantasy world, but a lot of these restaurants, this kind of, you know, kicked off because we had Molly Melman talking about Let Us Entertain You. The expectation of a lot of these, you know, fine dining experiences, and I don't mean fine dining like white tablecloth, but just the idea that you're downtown, is that they're all clean, right? They have to be. I don't know if there are too many of those kind of restaurants that are charging $18, $22, $25, $30 for entrees are, you know, biting their fingernails in the back or worse, right? Not washing their hands in the bathroom. I mean, there are signs up there, people. But that seems to be the go-to here. All right, so I'm getting a ton of great stuff on the shows that will reunite. We'll talk about that coming up right here at 10 o'clock. 815 says, I'll go with Justin. Price first. Okay, great. The prices are high. I expect way more in food. Then I'd go ambiance and then service. If the prices are lower, then I'll give a little bit more on the others. That makes a lot of sense, right? I agree. For sure. All right, 312-981-7200. I have a list of texts here. This is great. Of great, awesome shows that people want to see reunions for. So we'll get to that right after Vix News, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 until 11 o'clock. Dave Plyer on, coming up at 11 o'clock tonight. Last hour, we talked with Molly Melman from Let Us Entertain You and ranked what you want from a restaurant experience. Before that, we talked about banning cashless stores and also the fiasco at Lincoln Park High School. Also tonight, talked about Airbnb and whether or not it should be banned in your community. And coming up later this hour, we'll bring you the download on Chicago Business, where we talk with the CEO of Givenly, which outsources gift giving for corporations and their clients. Busy nights Friday night. But right now we're talking about the news today that was all over Hollywood. The Oscars are coming up. You'd think it'd be all about the movies, but it's about TV and a specific reunion as the cast of Friends is going to reunite for an unscripted vehicle. That could be a movie or a series. I'm not sure what it is. For HBO Max. Ugh. This would be the premium service for HBO. Which I thought that's what HBO was. I feel like I keep getting sidetracked every time I get to the point of HBO Premium or HBO Max. Because you know what they're going to do? They're going to have a hot show and they're going to be like, you know what? I know you like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but now it's on Max. You got to pay $8.99 on top of the $17.99 you're paying. But don't get me started. Anyway, the cast members are going to come back for a cool $4 million apiece to do this unscripted. Now, who knows what that means? It's so early in the process. Is it going to be a film? Is it going to be a song and dance number? Is it going to be a talk back? That's what we're worried about, that it'll just be a stage and they'll all come out and talk about their favorite episodes. You're like, this is what all the hype was for? Okay. Like a festival, like a think tank ideas festival. Ladies and gentlemen, David Schwimmer. He comes out, he's like, when I was thinking about Ross, what I was thinking about was, what would a paleontologist do? No, we don't need that. We need you to actually play Ross. If that's going to happen, if there's going to be a reunion, play Ross. So it got us thinking about what would you like to see do the same thing. Some great stuff early on tonight. 312 was talking about Seinfeld. Now, Seinfeld has done it. If you watched Curb Your Enthusiasm a couple years back, Larry David brought the entire cast of Seinfeld, including Jerry Seinfeld himself, onto a storyline for Curb. It was great, right? That was a great way to do it because it wasn't going back to the Jerry's apartment. It wasn't stale. They got to play themselves, and they were in Seinfeld's world, if that makes sense. Others said Cheers, which has really grabbed my attention. Cheers is a jam-packed cast. when you see Cheers and every superstar that has moved on from that sitcom, you would love to see a reunion of Kelsey Grammer and George Wendt and John Ratzenberger and Ted Danson and Woody Harrelson and Shelley Long, Kirstie Alley. Although I don't know if they ever crossed over. But it makes you think about which shows you'd like to see. So 312-981-7200. You can imagine it in any way you'd like. It doesn't have to be back on the same set. It could be like the old network movies where the stars of the different shows, like a Growing Pains or Who's the Boss, they would go on a cruise. And they'd all be on the same cruise. It could be like that. So let's see here. As 708 asks to start us off, which version of Cheers, Diane or Rebecca? They could find a way to get them both involved. We don't have time for petty. We don't have time for that. They can figure it out. 269 says West Wing. It's a great idea. There's an Aaron Sorkin show. There's talk of, I think we talked on the program, I forgot it was a crosstalk or something about West Wing being redone, that there's a remake in the works in Hollywood. I don't know if it's Aaron Sorkin or if it's just the idea or how different that would be for a White House in 2020 and the White House that they were portraying in the late 90s. Interesting. But yeah, that's a great, oh my gosh, think about that cast. They could bring everybody back. I'm not sure. Pete, you know better when it comes to the actors, but I think they're all still alive. I don't think there's anybody that is gone. I mean, Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen, Rob Lowe, Bradley Whitford.
Mm-hmm.
Dulé Hill.
Allison Janney.
Allison Janney. The Mad Men girl for Mad Men, Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, yeah, she was in that, yeah.
But with Mrs. Landingham. Landingham.
Right.
But still, Martin Sheen's
That would be a great reunion. Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's kind of like the show Veep. Now they're not the president, but they're still acting presidential, something like that. 708 says the Brady Bunch. I would accept the Brady Bunch. They did that. They did it with the HGTV show. I know you'd say, wait, where they tried to recreate this, just this happened a couple months ago, where they tried to recreate the Brady Bunch house, the Property Brothers, and all the stars from HGTV, but they brought those actors back to play a part and a role. That's a very creative way to do a Brady Bunch reunion. The Brady Bunch reunions that they've done in movies and other places always are a little stale. This is a great way to do a reunion through a home improvement show. Not a bad idea. I like that idea. 312-981-7200. And beyond just the dad, right? And Alice. Or the two. And Florence Henderson. Yeah. It'd be difficult to do that. But they've done it. They've done it. 630 says, how about Ally McBeal? Yeah, another one. Now, Ally McBeal had Portia de Rossi. I'm trying to think of the other stars. Pete, this is right up Pete's alley. And this is where I lose. This is where I don't do enough research on Ally McBeal.
Tina Fey's friend in 30 Rock, the blonde?
Oh, yeah, Manzouris. Not Jane Manzouris, Jane Krakowski.
Yeah.
Right. She was in Ally McBeal?
Yeah.
She's great.
Robert Downey.
Oh, there you go. Wasn't it Bruce, it feels like Bruce Willis was in it, but that's Moonlighting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different.
Cybill Shepherd,
right. Chewie's got a great one, Married with Children. Now that's one that would be a great cast to get back together. And they're all still around, and Christina Applegate, of course, the biggest star, Ed O'Neill. Such great, I mean, that would be a good Chicago. Maybe they could do something that's more expansive of Chicago. And the neighbors would still be there. You can do that kind of stuff. 312-981-7200. We got a ton of them here, and I want to get through them because it's so fun to see all of these shows that you're mentioning, many of which can be seen on Antenna TV, by the way, which is a great station that we're sister stations with. There's some great ones on Antenna TV that we haven't talked about. 227 with Marla Gibbs and Jack A. How great would that be? Bring that show back. And if I'm not mistaken, was Regina King in 227 as a teenager? She, of course, was the star in The Watchmen. That'd be an awesome show to reunite. There's some great ones. I'm going to go through this the Antenna TV list because there's such great shows here, and I'll bring those up too as well. We'll take a break here and stay on target because I seriously have 50 shows that you have texted in about that you would like to see a reunion for. So we'll get to it. Stay with us. We're talking about the reunions of some of the shows. The news today that Friends is going to do a reunion on HBO Max. One of the best sitcoms of all time. Not my cup of tea, but people love it. My son loves it. The reruns that they do on whatever station, they just play it nonstop, has grabbed his attention. And I'll watch him just watching a ton of Ross and Rachel. Ugh. There are better ones here about reunions. And we put out the number 312-981-7200. And you have responded. How about a reunion of Alf? I'm not sure if you could do Alf. I think the dad is no longer with us. But the puppet's probably mangled and dirty at this point. Hogan's Heroes, same thing. Hogan's Heroes is a tough one because I don't think those guys are around to do a full cast reunion. 815, how about Freaks and Geeks, an all-star cast? Freaks and Geeks was a great Judd Apatow vehicle that everyone, I mean, if you didn't get a chance to see it, you check it out. I don't know where it's at, but yeah, absolutely. Everyone from Jason Segel's in that, Paul Rudd in that, James Franco, Linda Cardinelli. There's so many great people in that show. And Seth Rogen. Yeah, that would be an amazing... They should come back together with a Freaks and Geeks movie. You know, you would... You can accept, like I said, you can be open to interpretation of how they get back together. It doesn't have to be right back in the same house and the same scene and the same vibe. They can be somewhere else. That would be a great one to go somewhere else. Just do a whole movie about it. 630 says, the reunion I would like to see is the show Northern Exposure. Yeah, absolutely, right? I love that show. I mean, all of the actors are still around, and I think maybe one of the older gentlemen may have perished. But that would be a great show. And that ended so strangely. But yeah, I would be in that. I used to, when I was in college, thinking about it more, we used to have Northern Exposure parties because it was a Monday night. It was an excuse to try and get all the friends together in our apartment in Roscoe Village. David, what would you like to see a reunion for?
Hey, I was never a big fan of this show, but I'm still pretty sure that everyone is still around. Baywatch?
Yeah, right. That would be great. That would be David Hasselhoff. That would be... Oh my gosh, that would be Nicole Eggers. That would be Pamela Anderson.
So many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. There, and, a lot of famous people came out of that show.
Yeah, I think they're all, I think some of them were pretty intelligent and kind of retired from acting altogether and took on serious jobs. I can't think of her name yet, but I think everyone on that show is still around.
Yeah, that would be a good one. That's a great one, David. Thank you, buddy. Jason, what do you like? What would you like to see a reunion of?
Heroes. It was a show about a bunch of teenagers who have superpowers.
Yeah.
And it was a very good show. It was a very good show, especially the episode where the cheerleader, like, finds out she has superpowers after the school gets set on fire, and, like, she breaks her finger back in place.
Right. And who is the cheerleader? It was the woman who ended up in Nashville, right? She was, like, the star.
I think it was. I haven't been watching the show in a while, but I think it was.
Yeah. All right, that's a good one. Thanks, Jason. What is the woman's name, Pete? You would know.
Hayden Panettiere.
You're so good, man. Like a photographic memory over there to remember every star from the 90s. Was that 90s, 2000s show? That would be a good reunion if you, because that had a cult following.
Yeah. Milo Ventimiglia.
Come on.
From This Is Us.
He's in that? Or that's, okay. 708 says Wings. That's a great sit. That's got the guy from Monk. That's also got a ton of Steven Weber's in that. There's a couple other... the guy who was in the wine movie who became famous. I forgot which guy. What was the guy in the wine movie with Giamatti? You can tell where I'm he was in Wings.
Yeah, he's in Divorced.
Yeah, yeah. He would be
Three Names, Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, right. There you go. See, that would be a good one. Squat says, how about Ren and Stimpy? That's great. I haven't heard about Ren and Stimpy in a long time. 630 says Frasier. Yes, Frasier would be a great... You can't do that, though, because John Mahoney passed away. Yeah, I mean, just with Kelsey Grammer alone. 312 says, how about Reno 911? Yeah, that was Reno 911. That was a great show. Those are most of the cast members of the state, right? And Sledgehammer. Sledgehammer was a great... That was a great show. That was a goofy parody show of cop shows in the 80s, late 80s on ABC. And I forgot the main guys, but there was really funny moments where it was almost like a Naked Gun kind of vibe. It was a very good show. Very funny. I remember that being very funny. I would totally go for a reunion of that. Yeah, 262 says, I'd definitely love to see a Freaks and Geeks reunion set at 15 to 20 years later in the mid-90s. 678 says, how about the Wonder Years? Oh, that would be great. Winnie and Kevin. 847 says, the Mary Tyler Moore Show had a Rhoda reunion some years ago. It was bittersweet about both friendships, but also loss, which is true of real life. But I believe most viewers want to laugh again with the characters and just enjoy seeing them together. You're right. That's why I'm not buying a Friends reunion that it's David Schwimmer and Matthew LeBlanc talking about what it was like backstage. I don't care. I can get that on a DVD extra. At least do the least, like what Larry did on Curb Your Enthusiasm, where they made them part of the plot. Maybe it wasn't Elaine, it was Julia Louis-Dreyfus instead, but she still was acting. She was still playing. It was great. I liked that a lot. 630 says, how about that 70s show? Yeah. Neil says, how about Boston Legal? 312 says, Married with Children would never work today. It upset the snowflakes. What do you think was watching Married with Children at the time? The snowflakes. 630, how about Knight Rider? They redid a Knight Rider, right? They tried to remake it. Tried to do like a CBS-type show, and that didn't work. But then again, none of these work when they're remade. You have to get a reunion of the cast. MASH, brought up by 940. 847 says, so hope the Friends reunion won't have everybody split up again. That's so true. They got... The ebb and flow of that show is they're all going to have to recouple. 708 says, I'm definitely behind Cheers. Cheers is the number one. You know, here's a couple of great shows. 847 says The Cosby Show. Oh, wait, never mind. Right, that's not going to work. Matlock. 847 says, I love Matlock. Oh, this is Mary. Mary says, Andrew Griffin and Don Knotts both deceased. If you tried to revive the show with other actors, it wouldn't be the same. Murder, She Wrote, but I'd be open to that because Angela Lansbury is still alive. And by the way, I'm only 49, but I like Matlock and Murder, She Wrote. And they're good shows. Some of the Antenna TV shows that I was looking at the lineup totally fit into this. Family Ties. They show Family Ties on Antenna TV on weeknights at 9 and Sundays at 6. But that'd be great. Michael J. Fox, if he could come, and I know he's got Parkinson's, but that would be great. Justine Bateman, Meredith Baxter Burning. That would be an amazing reunion show. That'd be television history if they did that. The Facts of Life, another one that you would want to see a reunion of. Give Me a Break. Line up to see Give Me a Break. Growing Pains, of course, shown on Antenna TV. Head of the Class, Howard Hessman. These are great sitcoms. The Hogan Family with Jason Bateman. Wow. Yeah, these are great. Murphy Brown, they tried to do a... They did that. They did a... That didn't work. My Two Dads, which I did hear they're doing a remake of that show. Not a reunion, but a remake. Which would be terrible. News Radio? Can't do it because Phil Hartman's dead. But I think they replaced Phil Hartman with John Lovitz, didn't they? That was the bit. Silver Spoons. Either Jason Bateman and Ricky Schroeder. That would be a great one. Webster. And here's the best one, probably. Welcome Back, Cotter. Just imagine a Gabe Kaplan and a John Travolta. How great would that be? Wow. Still coming in. Max Headroom, 630. Ed Sullivan Show, which, yeah, I don't know how you could do the Ed Sullivan Show. That's being done right now. That's all late night television. They're just ripping off Ed Sullivan, right? Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 847, right on. That would be a good one. WKRP. That would be a great reunion. WKRP. Living on the air in Cincinnati. Is everybody alive on WKRP? Who's missing from that one? Pete?
Is Gordon Jump?
Oh.
Is he still dead?
I don't
know.
Yeah, he was. But you might be able to get away with one or two characters not being there. If Hessman is there and Venus Flytrap is there and Lonnie Anderson is there, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much is what you need. And Herb Tarlick. good stuff. You're absolutely right. These are all great. I think WKRP could be a winner. I really do. If you can imagine, that would be an. Maybe they could do these live like they do in ABC and you see them do these sitcoms together. Maybe that's too hard. Maybe they could do one-off specials that could be, you know, a one-hour reunion type thing. Or maybe it's just a basic, you know, back to the drawing board kind of sitcom with these characters and who they are now. But if you're going to do it with friends and you've seen it done with Will and Grace in other places, let's try some new stuff. Let's bring some of the old back and try it in the new. I'll take it. 312-981-7200. Coming up, we got the download on Chicago Business. 224 says, Andy Griffith. Do the Andy Griffith show with Kathy Griffith. Different kind of show, right? All right, we'll take a break here, but the download of Chicago Business is coming up, and we're going to talk with the CEO of Givenly, and we'll talk about corporate giving, essentially outsourcing for gifting between corporations and their clients. That's interesting. That's an area that people just don't think about, the swag closet, if you will. So we'll have that conversation coming up here. 312-981-7200. It's Justin Kaufman at 720 WGN.
It's business time.
Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and now it's time for the download on Chicago Business. This is where we talk to Chicago entrepreneurs about their business and their stories so we can better understand ours. Today, let's talk about Givenly. Givenly is a company that helps businesses build better relationships one gift at a time. Mark Mancini is here. He's the owner of Givenly, and thanks for being here, Mark. Great to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having me here today,
so
Justin.
So what does that mean, to one gift at a time? This is really about corporate giving.
It's about corporate giving. It's about creating loyalty within your business network, not only with customers, but also with employees, and kind of building a loyal network through showing appreciation via gifts.
Where's this idea come from for you?
So originally I had the idea. I used to own an insurance financial services agency many years ago. And when you have a small book of business, it's very easy to stay in front of your client network and let them know that they're appreciated and you value having them as a client. But once your book of business grows very quickly, like mine did, it became a very tedious and overwhelming task. And so I always wondered why there wasn't a service or a tool to facilitate the act of sending out gifts in mass. So fast forward, I moved to Chicago about 5 years ago, and this topic comes up in conversation with a friend, and I kind of peek around the internet and the marketplace and realize nobody's adequately solving this need.
Because when I say corporate giving means something completely different. Corporate gift giving is what you're doing. And this is the concept that, you know, you want to give a gift maybe at the holidays time or to say, hey, thanks for being our client. But you're right. Like at a certain point, if you're amassing clients, that becomes a lot more difficult to do in-house. So it's really an off-the-shelf gift-giving service.
Absolutely. It sure does. And we realized beyond just the act of sending gifts that there was a much deeper, disjointed corporate workflow involving gifts and merchandise. So a much broader need in the marketplace, and Givenly has evolved to address that need beyond just the sending of gifts to kind of the end-to-end workflow facilitation behind the act of organizing gifting programs and corporate merchandise and incentive programs. Mm. And so we meet that need with technology.
So what does that mean, to meet that need with technology? What do you do that expedites and makes it more efficient?
Well, everything from the sourcing to the program design to the tracking, the automation, and the audit trail and reconciliation of accounts, we've built out an enterprise-focused tool that really kind of meets this end-to-end workflow need within the corporate environment. And we're, you know, we help businesses large and small. We're really focused on the enterprise segment, and that's where, you know, the greatest need exists in terms of just the amount of inefficiencies across an organization with, you know, thousands of employees, for example.
Right, right. So you're talking about employee gifts as well as outside vendors.
Gifting, and like I said, we've broadened into the world of also corporate merchandise, branded merchandise. Mm-hmm. We find that a lot of companies try to manage their swag or their promotional merchandise in-house. They may even have what's called the closet, where they keep
we got
all
one.
Of their swag, right? And it's a real pain for companies to manage, to keep it in stock, to keep track of orders, to place those orders and warehouse them. And so we've actually broadened our solution to address that need and that complexity and deliver it through our tool and our solution as well.
Yeah, that's a great point, because everybody knows, I think, the, you know, when you're talking about the business part of Givenly, we're like, okay. But when you mention the closet with all the stuff in it, everybody knows what that is.
Absolutely. And it's surprising that this isn't addressed adequately in the marketplace. It really is, especially at the enterprise level. You'd think they would have gotten a solution in place years ago, and we're finding that they're still struggling with this.
Because ultimately, you'll be putting into an office manager's hands the ability to buy T-shirts or buy tumblers or buy Frisbees, whatever it might be. And ultimately, they're wrong on how many they needed to buy. And they stack them up in the closet and they're stuck there forever. This is where you can help a business be more efficient with tracking this stuff and making sure you have enough, but also making sure you're not spending too much.
Absolutely. And so that's part of our system places the ability to add controls and budgetary restrictions, whether it's at the company level or at the regulatory industry level. We have a tool to help them manage and track spend. So like you said, this activity falls into somebody's hands and onto somebody's plate, and we come and take it off their plate.
Right.
So they can really focus on the business.
The one thing that I would consider to be a challenge would be, you don't want to come across as that you bought a service to give a gift to a client, meaning you let somebody else do it. It's a line item as opposed to it being personal. I gave that line item to Givenly. They're going to take care of that, and then I'm done. And then the guy calls up and says, "I don't golf. Thanks for the golf club." How do you deal with making sure that this is a personal exchange?
Absolutely. And so Givenly, one of our points is we work entirely in the background, so that when somebody orders a gift for their favorite client, it comes directly from the vendor. So we're in the background delivering this technology to facilitate that process. But we also take it a step further with curation of catalogs for companies. So we'll build targeted, curated catalogs around the company, around the department, even around the individual, so that they have their go-to selection of gifts available at the click of the mouse to send in one or send thousands in minutes, in order to, you know, always have the selection of the very best.
Mark Mancini is my guest on the Download in Chicago Business. He's the owner of Givenly, which is all about building loyalty and helping businesses with gift giving. This has been an issue, and you see this a lot in the public sector. Gifts can be considered as, I don't even know what you call them, extra. You can't get them, right? Or you bribes, if it's whatever it might be.
There's some regulation.
There's regulation behind it. In the private sector, there's still, you know, it's kind of it's a little bit looser as put together. Do you have to think about those kind of things when you're helping a client with what kind of gifts they want to give in the relationship they have to their vendors or to their clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really try to create, we don't necessarily have a one-size-fit-all approach. We do try to attack the problem at the enterprise level and create a customized program around the organization. But the technology brings it all together and puts the power and control in their hands.
Right. They're the ones decide if I want to buy a boat for my...
Right.
For the client, you don't get involved. Just technology there.
And you'll find that in large organizations or small organizations that it's a free for all. Everybody is off on their own. Somebody's jumping on this website, somebody's going to that website, and there's no top down control at the admin, at the marketing, at the human resource level. And so that's what our system provides. We like to say the three C's: control, convenience, and centralization. It's very important, oftentimes, for management to control what is accessible, what people can actually send, because that is a representation of the brand.
Right, right.
and they want to control what gifts are going out, because that ultimately reflects on the organization itself.
For Givenly and for you and Givenly.com, do you see this as a business that can expand to when you say one of the C's is centralize? Is the goal to say, hey, we can be the technology that centralizes this for everybody? Meaning this is the idea that the sky's the limit, but if you're going to be doing corporate gift giving, you should go through us.
Absolutely. So there's kind of like three different evolutions of Givenly. First, it's the gifting problem alone. Then it's the corporate merchandise and incentive conundrum. And then it's beginning to expand into the ultimate engagement platform. Engagement with your customers, with employees, with channel partners, and all the different various stakeholders in the business ecosystem. Mm. And so that's really the broader problem we're trying to attack. And we find that it's still a very under addressed need. You know, 4 out of 5 companies we approach either didn't know a solution like this existed, or they're trying to handle it internally. And so they're very surprised when they say, wow, I didn't know something like this existed. Right. Absolutely. We're very interested in you taking this off our plate. It really is a major headache, and it's a non-core aspect in terms of operations to the business, but it sucks up a lot of time. It sucks up a lot of resources.
How do you prepare for expanding? What's when you have to scale your business and get bigger at Givenly, because more companies are going to flip the switch and go, yeah, I want to use your service. What do you have to do to make sure you're ready for an onslaught of Chicago businesses that want to be involved?
Well, absolutely. So we're a very process-driven organization, number one. So supporting our processes is our technology. Around expansion, we've got a really very powerful, very unique integration with Salesforce we're rolling out next month. And it truly is a game changer for us and, you know, potentially for the whole Salesforce application ecosystem, tying in our service and what we deliver to customers so that they're able to send gifts, buy their merchandise, send merchandise directly from within Salesforce. And so that provides us a channel into a much broader corporate marketplace. And then we rely on our experience of processes that I've developed over time to lay, you know, provide the infrastructure for that level of scale.
Right. This seems like a company that could be anywhere. And I think about the coasts, particularly Los Angeles and New York. That seems like that might be much more of a gift-giving culture than maybe some of the manufacturers and others that might be in this town. So why Chicago? What is it about Chicago that this is your headquarters? Why set up shop here?
You know, I love this city. I'm originally from Denver. I've kind of lived all over the world for many years. And I, like I said, moved here to Chicago 5 years ago. I didn't really have a job or really any specific direction. And I just immediately was blown away by how connected the city is, how friendly the people are. I really could not think of a better city to start a business in than Chicago, simply because one is the economic infrastructure. You have the cross section of so many different industries all within this particular city. And, you know, impressively, many, many of our vendors are also located here in Chicago. The nationwide vendors have presence in Chicago, but also just the community behind Chicago itself. You know, you can rely on people for introductions in a very scalable way, I guess. You know, if you've got a big network of people, and that people are always happy to make introductions, you probably wouldn't get that in other cities such as New York, for example, where it's a lot harder to network. So I think the underlying infrastructure of Chicago when it comes to networking is very pervasive, very prevalent in the city, where I don't think it exists in other cities across the country.
The company is Givenly. You can find them at givenly.com. Mark Mancini is the owner. Mark, thanks for coming in and being my guest on the Download Chicago Business.
Absolutely, Justin. Thank you for having me here.
Oh my God, it's February 7th. Do you realize that in less than a week, baseball is back? Pitchers and catchers are reporting in the middle of next week. The White Sox, was it the 12th or the 13th? Oh my gosh, the 12th, February 12th. The White Sox are reporting to Arizona. That is amazing. Just snuck up on us, huh? Of course, the White Sox had such a great offseason. You got to be excited about that, right? You got to be excited about the fact that there are so many players who are coming to the South Side that have won in other places, that have been all-stars, have been leaders in different clubhouses. It was just this time last year we were all bemoaning the fact that we didn't get Manny Machado. Remember that? Everyone was down and out about Manny Machado. And And it was Rick Hahn who was like, nah, we're going to get somebody. Don't worry. We're going to be very aggressive. And nothing happened. And we had Eloy Jimenez, and we kind of played it out. And we enjoyed that White Sox team, but they weren't very competitive. They got lucky. If you remember towards the end of that year, because I remember we were really paying attention to whether or not they were going to get 90 losses. And then it ended up being, I think, 72 and 89. One game didn't play. Like the last weekend against the Tigers in one of those forums, there was a rain out, and they're like, what's the point? Both of these teams are terrible. But it helped that the White Sox did not lose 90 games on a technicality. So great. Good start. I mean, that's great. We got to win. Got to go for little victories. That was a little victory. Not losing, it was a little victory. So to this offseason, what a great offseason. I'm excited. I'm excited as a Sox fan. Mostly, I think the most obviously Dallas Keuchel's a huge deal, former Cy Young Award winner. I think the Parrot, Edward Encarnacion, has been a playoff contender. He was on the Yankees last year in the playoffs. He's been on Toronto Blue Jays for years in the playoffs. He was on the Cleveland Indians when they were in the playoffs. This dude only is on playoff teams. And he comes to Chicago to be the DH. I love it. We've got Luis Robert, kid from Cuba who's, what, 20 years old, 21 years old, who is going to be starting in center field. He's this year's Eloy Jimenez. Eloy Jimenez, who's back for his second year, can only get better. Yasmani Grandal, who was on the Dodgers for all those playoff teams and all the games against the Cubs, the catcher was Yasmani Grandal. That's pretty cool. These are all big names. Gio Gonzalez, who pitched for the Nationals, who was a starter in several playoff games. That's what I mean. It's not just guys that you're bringing in because you're like, oh, that guy's a good pitcher. Oh, he'll be good. They all have postseason experience. They're all leaders. They're all guys that have won in different places. That's exciting. That's something that doesn't usually in Chicago, you get somebody like, well, he's really good on the Twins. He was really good. Really was leading that clubhouse in San Diego. No, this is prime time. I like it. I like all the moves. Even down to Steve Cishek, the submarine pitcher. We got a submarine pitcher on the White Sox. How American League is that? If I were Steve Cishek, I would grow a mustache like Dan Quisenberry. Right? Something that brought you back to 80s baseball. And, you know, I'm somebody that really, truly likes both teams. I'm more of a Sox guy than a Cubs guy. And the Cubs didn't do much when it comes to free agency. But they're still the Cubs. You can't at all write them off. They are still a competitive squad. If for all the people they lost Cole Hamels. They lost a couple other guys. Who cares? They still have at the core of their squad, which is pretty amazing, Wilson Contreras, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Schwarber, Jason Hayward. Who's playing? Someone playing center. Albert Elmora. But the point is, all those guys were in the World Series team. All those guys are been in playoff series after playoff series. They got a new manager. Joe Maddon's gone. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Grandpa Rossi running the show, but that's another guy that was on that team. So I wouldn't write off the Cubs either, even though they didn't make any huge moves. If anything, they lost some of the dead weight. They still have an amazing rotation. John Lester, maybe getting long in the tooth, but still a World Series winning pitcher. You then got the professor, right? You've got Jose Quintana's back, right? Yu Darvish is back. I don't know. There's still a lot of opportunity there for the Chicago Cubs. So I don't know. This, as much as it's been a real letdown for sports in general, the Bears were a very disappointing season. The Bulls are unspeakable. The Blackhawks, the jury's still out. they could make a run here and get a playoff spot. They've got the talent. It is the first time, I think, in a long time that we've been excited about both squads going into spring training. There's been a couple of years in the last, I remember maybe the 2015 season, maybe 2016, where the White Sox started strong with Chris Sale, and they were up in this AL Central. You're like, maybe there'd be a Subway Series. And then they just trickled away, and it's been rebuilt ever since. But this year, I think that both squads are going to be competitive. It's exciting. It's hard to believe that it's just 4 or 5 days away until pitchers and catchers report. We'll talk about it next week. 708 says, I'm a Cub fan, but I'm also a Chicago fan. I cheer for the White Sox when they're not playing my Cubs, and it's always a good thing in Chicago when both baseball teams are doing well. Right? 708 says, don't you dare laugh at the professor. Kyle Hendricks? You're right, I did chuckle, the professor. A couple years ago, we had a nickname contest. Do you remember this? I think it was for the World Series team, where every Wednesday night we would spend time with one player and we would try to give them a proper nickname. This is that Cubs team, because we felt that their nicknames were dumb. Most sports nicknames today are a combination of the first couple letters of their first name and a first couple letters of their last name, a K Bry. Let's go A-Riz. It's terrible, right? So we came up with good Nick. I can't even remember all of them. But I do remember that Albert Almora was AA, right? And we had, it wasn't a professor for Kyle Hendricks. It was something close.
I believe it was the calculator.
Calculator. These are not ours necessarily. These were suggestions by the listeners. And then we voted on them, right? You have them there?
Wilson Contreras' Sweet Peppers.
Or Sweet Peppers. That's a great one, right? Why would you not take that's per in Chicago?
Dexter Fowler was Free Range.
Free Range, yep.
Tommy La Stella, Tommy Gunn. Al Morrow was Whopper Jr.
Whopper Jr., that's weird.
Haymaker for Jason Hayward. Ham Jam, Jason Hamill.
Jason Hamill, right.
Papa Smurf, Joe Madden. John Lackey was Big Country. John Lester, the Bald Eagle. David Ross, Pit Boss.
Pit Boss, right. That was good.
Travis Wood, the Craftsman.
The Craftsman.
Matt Caesar. Great all-time great Cub, Matt Caesar. Crouton Kid. Mike Montgomery, Candyman. I don't even remember the origins of some of these. Anthony Rizzo, if you remember, we had a problem with Anthony Rizzo because for some reason you gave Roger Badish like the judging, and he screwed everything up because
we gave it a weird Italian nickname.
Ziti was, but Wizzo was, I think, where we wanted to go. Wizzo.
Right. The best part about that bit was we made all the listeners had to explain why. So they had to show their math on why it was Sweet Peppers. And it was a lot of fun. And so they could persuade the judges, not unlike a great game show. So I'm sure Roger was persuaded by Ziti. Someone did a really good argument for Ziti.
Hector Rondon, Hectoro. Carl Edwards Jr., Vitamin K.
All these guys are gone. I wonder if they take with them their nickname.
Jake Arrieta, Iceman.
Yeah.
What else? Miguel Montero, Freeze Frame.
Okay. So stupid. Yeah. 412.
That's my notes.
That's your notes. I'm glad you got that. That's amazing that you were able to find that. 412, I switched from the Cubs to the Sox after 20 years of being a Cubs fan. Yeah, I've heard a lot of that. And 708 says, which film won the Chicago movie brackets? Blues Brothers. There you go. We wrapped up the week. That'll do it. All right, we'll take a break here. Dave Plyer coming up next here on 720 WGN.